Who's afraid of sunburns?
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
No place to go, darling.
Yep, it's gone.
Baby.
Steve, my car said 6 below and the Tahoe's never wrong. Is that what you had?
Mine was 2 below.
Dave, what'd your car say?
-1.
-4.
-4.
You win, Steve.
My car doesn't say anything.
Your car doesn't say anything?
It's got a tape player, Steve.
Oh, wow.
Mine said my tire pressure is low. Yeah, it always does that in the cold weather.
I wanted to ask, because Mary mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
So how do you know if your tire's really low or it's just the weather messing with you?
You look at it.
If it's too cold to get out of the car.
Yeah, and if it's cold, Dave, it's probably the weather.
I can answer this for you, Dave.
Okay.
Because I've gone through this many times. Okay. Yes. You know, for years I worked on Indy Pickers.
Okay, here we go.
I know that.
If there is a 5 pound per square inch discrepancy on any of the tires, you must apply pressure to those tires by putting more air in.
Right.
5 pounds.
Yeah.
So in other words, you got 32 on the left front, you got 27 on the right rear, you got troubles. Right here in River City. Right.
So do you take 5 out of the left front?
No.
Or do you add 5 to the right front?
On the inside of your door,
I know, it tells you that's
a little sticker. And this is a perfect day to get outside and look for that. But look at that little sticker. It'll tell you your PSI. Now, there's
something
called...
Mine gives my PSA on my register. It came up. It said it should be at 36.
Well, you're driving a fancy car.
Right.
Yeah. So if you have a fancy car, it'll tell you what the number is. But, Dave, I know the kind of car you drive, and I'm thinking you need 600-700 pounds in each tire.
Dave just got a new car, so I don't know.
Yeah, you're fine. There's the old rule. You don't have to check your new car for 2 years.
Oh, good.
That's the old rule.
But here's the thing. If you get that 5 pound discrepancy or more, air doesn't automatically go back into the tires when the temperature warms up. You know, it'll get a little better, but it won't get a lot better. That's why I always have a mechanic ride with me.
Who needs that? Everyone should have Steve Cochran ride with you.
That's all I know. I know nothing.
I like it. I didn't know
that. That's good to know.
Okay,
I didn't know that.
Okay, Pistone. By the way,
don't put fix a flat in a fix flat. Everybody cares fix a flat? Fix a flat. Don't put it in tires. Unless you're going to get a new tire. If you're committed to get a new tire, it's fine. Otherwise, fix a flat, not good.
What? You mean...
And also, don't put it on a muffin. It's terrible on bad breakfast and pastry treats.
It's good on yogurt.
It's a solid. It's made of yogurt.
When I had the flat coming in a couple of months ago, remember I used...
Yeah,
with Sandberg helped me get
did
my
they
tire.
Save your tire?
No, I had to get a new tire.
Yeah, you had to get a new tire.
but I had to get my car to a tire place.
Right.
What was I supposed to do? Yeah.
No, he's right. In the short term, it works.
Yeah.
But only
it'll get you there.
Yeah.
Okay, but this weather. So my tire pressure said it was low when I got in the car, and then it said it was at 26.
Uh-huh.
As I kept going, it rose. By the time I got out of the car, it was at 32 in all of them.
That's impossible.
It did that.
No, it's impossible.
Yes.
Now you're drinking.
A feat of nature.
No, it was outside all night. It was low, and then it just, as
this
soon as
is
it
a
gets warm, starts going.
This is nothing short of a miracle.
It blows itself up.
No, it doesn't. Blow you up.
I don't know. They were good when I got out.
All right, next. Next. I haven't even started. Why don't we go ahead and start?
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top 666, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
My father would have said, gotta keep airing the tires, you moron. 1 below is equivalent to 20 below in wind chill this morning. Look, it's friggin' cold. That's a technical weather term.
The Metra and the CTA, as Mary just mentioned,
too cold to train?
Are already in trouble.
This is the part.
Pay attention to that.
This is the part where if you get ice on the tracks, they set fire to the tracks.
I don't know what it is, and Mary, you may know this, but at least CTA Metra, I know they have older CTA cannot function in the cold, and you'd think it'd be the other way around because when the cold, you'd want public transit to work, but they are delayed all the time when it gets cold.
Yeah, they call them electrical wiring problems, track problems, mechanical problems. They just tell you whatever. So
it's a bad day to train too.
Yeah, but you don't want to be standing there waiting.
No, that's not good at all.
The official wind chill at O'Hare Airport right now is -25.
Oh, that's excellent. My daughter's supposed to move next Wednesday to her new house. Alleged high that day will be minus five. What are we? What are we in Barrow, Alaska? What is that? I mean, I understand it's winter, but come
that's
on.
That's the high.
It's warmer in Alaska.
The low will be in the like negative 13.
Yeah.
We moved into our house 25 years ago in this week in January, and it was about that temperature.
How do movers do it?
I'm so thankful we had movers because
I don't know how they do it.
Yeah,
any of you guys that work outside, God bless you.
Is the one little guy on the moving crew, so you have to put a shirt on when it gets this cold?
Or at least keep it on. This is the day where I'd have all the interns come in if I'm the movers. If I'm two guys in a truck, I get the other two guys. Next, Roger Stone indicted. Roger Stone indicted. Roger Stone indicted. That's the breaking Trump news this morning.
And it's juicy. The indictment is juicy.
Yeah, 20-some-odd pages of information that says Stone absolutely had contact with WikiLeaks and senior members of the Trump campaign. Donald Jr., you might want to pack.
Right, and those senior members, according to the indictment, directed Stone to get more information from WikiLeaks.
Yep.
And wanted to know exactly when it was coming.
He was picked up this morning at his home by the FBI in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where he'll be in front of a judge later this morning. The 7-count indictment includes false statements and witness tampering, read obstruction of justice and witness tampering. He's in a lot of trouble. Not a big shock. He's been waiting to be indicted off and on, but certainly the timing was. This is when the feds show up. The feds don't come in like 10 and wait for coffee.
And now CNN has the video of the raid, which is extremely over the top with the armed
gunman. Does seem wild. I'd love to know
why they're going to run that on a B-roll for
it's gonna
three
be
and a half weeks.
Yeah, but anyway, he's indicted. And once again, there's no collusion. Who are we to think there was collusion?
And these FBI agents, by the way, working without pay this morning at 4 a.m.
How about that?
Oh, man, you got to be kidding me.
How
right?
about that? Next, Kwame Raoul, your Illinois Attorney General, announced that the office is reviewing the sentence of former police officer Jason Van Dyke. For those of you that felt that 6 years and 9 months seems pretty light, some critics say the sentence was too lenient, and Kwame Raoul's office will have a statement later today or early next week on what the latitude is to change that.
I didn't know you could do that.
I don't know that you can. Yeah, I don't know. The mega development on the north side called Lincoln Yards was approved by the planning committee yesterday at City Council's first step of completing a 55-acre project on the river that would reshape the area with new parks and high-rise buildings, in some cases up to 60 stories tall. We were talking about this yesterday, I think mostly off the air. I don't know how that happens there.
They have, I mean, you think about the north side of Chicago, there are not a lot of buildings over 10, 15 stories tall, I think is the, and the top, there's two buildings. There's one that's going to be 60 stories and another that's going to be 40 right along the river there. And it's a very small amount of land and area, but there's a whole infrastructure plan attached to redo the bridges, redo Armitage, redo a lot of the streets.
Yeah, there's
right
tons of benefit. I just didn't know you could build buildings that tall there if two go up, the rest are going to go up.
I agree. I don't know how they get that through, especially, but it's going to reshape and give a whole entire new look to the north side of Chicago.
Next, speaking of real estate, New York Times reported on Ken Griffin, Chicago's, Illinois' richest man.
Mm-hmm.
He bought the richest and most expensive house in America. It's a $238 million. I didn't make the mistake there. It's $238 million. It's one house.
It's not even
it's
a house.
Penthouse.
It's a penthouse.
Penthouse
in
Central Park.
How many bathrooms?
One and a half. Bath and a half.
Is it granite countertops?
No, it's the other stuff. It's the most expensive house in America. Ken Griffin, hedge fund investor Ken Griffin.
Can you imagine? I thought when I saw that, I was like, man, maybe it's a sports star. Maybe it's like an oil baron.
Well, I want to see what that house is. I mean, I don't want to go in it.
Right.
Because, you know, I wouldn't take my shoes off. But I want to see what's included.
My question is,
you think that includes the association fee
what's
for the building?
Yeah, what's the assessment each month from the condo association? I have a question. He's a huge political donor for Republicans in town. He's big bankroll for former Governor Rauner.
Yeah.
Does that end it? I mean, does he have more money? Like, I would think that this is it, and every time the next Republican wants to come to him, he's like, hey, all I can do is offer up my pad.
Don't you think $238 million would buy the building? Not just
crazy.
The penthouse?
Yeah, Rauner's moving in with him.
I didn't realize they're building a huge skyscraper on, I think it's the south end of Central Park. When I saw the pictures, I was like, oh, that's brand new.
It's crazy.
Yeah,
that's
crazy.
Next. Turns out the DNA kits we've been using to find out what our heritage is maybe don't even work. And after a set of identical twins got different results, or again, hear that, after a set of identical twins got different results, they went to biologists and geneticists to find out why. Scientists told them the popular genetic test gets it wrong most of the time. Are they using me as evidence? You remember when I did 23andMe, and yeah. one of the things that came back was I was likely to have a sprinter-type body?
Yes. Think about all the people who've done those tests and be like, I can't believe that I have Spanish blood or whatever it is, and that changed their life and their thought. And you know what? You probably don't.
Well, we don't know that they're not 100% accurate. Yeah, at this point, all we have is some scientific evidence that needs to be backed up.
Right. Now they're doing them for all the dogs. My daughter just did her dog. I'm like, please.
How do you get a dog to spit in a test?
I don't know what she did, but it was, you know, like a $70 test. Spit. She got it for free, I think.
Spit? Spit?
Yeah.
Spit
she was very spit. Excited. About all the breeds her dog is.
So is the dog.
That's it!
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
It's Lou's First Call with Lou Manfredini and Steve Cochran. Brought to you by American Weathermakers.
American Weathermakers, we won't be comfortable until you are.
It's the time of the show for Lou's First Call.
9 below in Twin Lakes, Wisconsin. 8 below in, pardon me, Crystal Lake. And Lou Manfredini is here. You wearing your long johns?
Actually, I'm wearing my Sorel boots, which are very warm.
And you got it, but that's it?
No, that and my my winter Cossack hat, so I look like a Russian.
Oh, well, perfect day for that, because Roger Stone needs a roommate.
Right. I hope the Mueller investigation doesn't come looking for me.
As early as you get up, they'd have to, you know, figure out another time to pick you up.
A little tip for all the people driving around on a cold day like this, and a lot of people, I think, maybe are noticing this. If you park your car outside in a day like this, chances are your tire pressure monitor is telling you have a flat tire.
We were just talking about this.
Yeah, right? we were talking about it.
And
it happened to me.
Yeah, and so it's not, you know, certainly take a look at your tires, but because it's so cold, especially if the car is parked outside, they shrink. You know, the air inside shrinks, and so all of a sudden those monitors are telling you something's wrong. Now, once you start driving, typically some cars are sophisticated enough that you can turn some dial or whatever and actually see the pressure in the tire. But you may notice that it goes away. If not, you may have to perform a reset, which for many cars you have to do when it's stopped. But do check the tires. Be careful, but don't worry about it. More than likely, it's just down a couple of pounds, and you'll be fine.
But I was making the point that I was told by a mechanic a long time ago, if you have a 5-pound discrepancy in every tire, you got to get air.
Agreed.
And also, Mary's got a magical car.
Yeah, I was telling Steve this morning, my tire pressure started. It was like 27. It said it's low. All of a sudden, by the time it was rising, and all three of my tires went up to 33.
Like a cake.
Yeah.
Well, they warmed up.
Yep. See, Steve, I'm not crazy. Yeah.
Well, no, you are crazy, but you just have a special car.
Like a cake.
No, I have my little Jeep Cherokee, and it's great.
Yeah.
Mary, you've been vindicated.
Kathy's in Elk Grove, and then we'll talk more to Lou about how cold he is. Kathy, do you have a question for Lou? There you are, Kathy. Do you have a question for Lou? How about now, Kathy? Do you have a question for Lou? There you are. Kathy, do you have a question for Lou?
Yes, my squirrels are eating my car.
All right, hold on one second. Hold on one second.
I know this issue.
Hold that thought. What did she say?
She said, the squirrels are eating my car.
What does that mean?
I thought she said.
This happened to my parents because they live out in a remote area. The squirrels love to get into the wiring.
Stay warm?
I don't know if it's to stay warm because this happens whenever, but and they mess up. My parents' cars happen to them twice because they live out in a remote area, and there's really nothing they can do except there are probably Lou's got the fix.
There is something they can do. There's a product called Fresh Cab, CAB, and it are these little packets that smell like mint, and they don't like that smell.
Why can't you just drop a tin of Altoids down then? Save some time.
You could. This is the curiously strong mint. But you open up the hood, and down low where the wires are, you're going to take some little bitty clamps. You can buy these little spring clamps at the hardware store, small ones. They're inexpensive. And you're going to clamp these down low so that that odor is down low. When they come by the car, they're not going to want to do this. If if this continues to be a problem, you're going to have to replace these things like every 30 days. If that hangs off the wire inside the car, it's not a big deal. Just make sure that you're clamping it towards the rear of the engine compartment, not anywhere near the fan, and low.
What is the reason the squirrels get into wire?
There is something in the wiring, in the actual coating of the plastic that they like to chew on. That is true of rodents like rats. In New York City, it is a huge problem. They spend, I don't know how many millions of dollars, because so much of their infrastructure is underground. And it's warm. There's so many wires in the tunnels in New York City. You may notice if you go there in the summertime, they have these huge things of nitrogen on the corners.
You sure they're not trying to sell the copper?
No, they might be.
Yesterday, by the way.
It's a problem here in the Midwest, too, but it's a very big problem in New York.
Well, there are some, and you've talked about this before, that you know, your rodents, your bugs, your critters, they need to stay warm in the wintertime.
Sure.
So yesterday, now this is no knock on this area, because I like this area, and this is also no secret, because we have rats all over the city of Chicago. It's a big city. I left an establishment in Lincoln Square yesterday, and I felt like somebody was walking next to me. And I looked down into my left, and there and down into my left, walking at about the same pace I was a neighborhood rat.
Hey, where are you going? Hey, big guy, where are you going?
And then we stopped, and then he got into a tiny rat Uber, and he went in a completely
neighborhood
different
rat, also known as Alderman.
That's a thing. Wasn't an Alderman.
Yeah.
So, Kathy, I hope you heard that. Kathy, your phone was like from outer space. So, I
hardware store fresh cab.
All right, that's good. C-A-B. I'm gonna call my dad on that too, because that's happened to that. That's happened at least twice where they had to pay out on wiring getting eaten.
Oh, and it's super expensive.
Yeah, it's super expensive, and the mechanics are not sympathetic.
So, Lou, when I was but a child, whenever we would leave in the wintertime to go somewhere, my father would say, leave a trickle going on the faucets.
Yeah.
People are going to be leaving. You're going to Valparaiso. Do you have to do this anymore?
Yeah. Especially in the older homes around the Chicagoland area. You know, if you have a kitchen sink or a vanity sink that's on an outside wall, if it's a cabinet, open up the cabinet doors, because you allow the room heat to kind of enter into the cabinet. Mm-hmm. That will help. A little bit of trickle both on the hot and the cold. So if it's a single handle, just raise it up right in the middle. And a tip is to, you know, put a bowl or a bucket if you can underneath there, because if you can collect some of that water, maybe, you know, you can at least use it for, I don't know, watering the plants or, you know, putting in the dog bowl or something like that, instead of just letting it go down the drain and collect some of it anyway. But it's way better than having frozen pipes. This is the kind of temperature where your home is going to make noises. You're going to be like, where'd that draft come from? The one thing I tell people all the time, the number one thing that you need to do to eliminate drafts, lock your windows. You probably open the windows in the spring and the summer, and you close them, but they're not locked. And so you're wondering, why are these so drafty? Check all your windows and lock them. You'll be amazed.
Okay. One final question. Your furnace works harder in this weather to stay at whatever temperature you keep the house at or not?
Absolutely. And I think for especially today and most of the day, go down there and check that filter. If you're not going anywhere, and a lot of people are be like, I'm not going out of the house, and you pull out that filter and it's filthy, you know, dirty, and you can see it's clogged, just leave it out. Leave it out until you have a chance to go to the hardware store and buy a new one, because when it has to force that air through the system, these furnaces are so sophisticated now with all kinds of sensors. When it senses that it's pushing too hard, it'll shut the system down. And then the HVAC guys will come out and they'll hit a reset button, put a new filter in and say, thank you very much, $300.
Mark? That happened to my husband this morning. He just texted me. Yeah, they said it was going to shut down his system. He temporarily fixed it, though. Yeah. They walked him through it.
Duct tape. Pull the filter out.
That's duct tape. Everything's duct tape. One of our great listeners, Margaret, says if your tires have nitrogen, they don't flatten. Nitrogen's colder than air.
Yeah, but most people don't have nitrogen.
Well, Margaret does.
Yeah. I mean, most people don't. And then my thing with that whole nitrogen thing is, how do I know you're putting it in there?
What are you? My dad? Get my dad. That's how they get you.
Yeah, right. My flip phone's fine.
And another helpful listener, we've got a couple of these, but from the 847, wires now have soybean in the plastic. Squirrels like that.
Oh, interesting. That is true. Some do. Yep.
You know what else they like? Nitrogen.
Nitrogen.
Yeah, they like nitrogen.
If it's actually in there.
So, congratulations to the listener, Kathy. Kathy won herself the prize. Oh, here it is. The April Air Wi-Fi thermostat that allows you to adjust the temperature of home's air on your smartphone from American Weathermakers at 60 Minutemen, 855-955-HVAC. Hear you on the radio tomorrow?
Yes, sir.
Thanks, buddy.
Love
Thanks,
you.
Lou. Love you back. 6:34 headlines in a moment. 7:20 WGN.
It's business time. It's business.
Time for the download on Chicago Business, and happy to welcome into the studio. By the way, if you go to the Hawks anytime, Bulls as well, pretty much any sports in Chicago, you're going to see the signage for Impact, and here from Impact is Corey Carnes, general manager at Impact. Good morning to you, and thanks for getting up in this cold.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Impact, is it, it feels to me like a consultancy, but you're more than that, right?
Yeah, so we're a technology provider, technically a managed service provider. We started out back in 99 primarily focusing on document output, so copy, print, leasing equipment, servicing that equipment.
But Office technology.
Yeah, right. So over the last 20 years, we've evolved into more of a consulting company, looking at ways to improve just the way people operate and use technology in businesses and not really optimizing that. So
efficiencies.
Yeah, efficiency.
There you go.
Optimizing business processes, workflows, and consulting on the IT standpoint.
Why don't we start the story with your story? Because you were a sales rep who worked his way up in this company over 16 years at Impact. You're now the general manager. How does one do that? I mean, for you to actually go step by step up the ladder at the company, talk a little bit about your story.
Sure. So it's a lot of hard work. It's a grind, just like any sales job, right? You know, a lot of knocking on doors, a lot of phone calls getting hung up on. But I can say when I started back in 2003, we didn't quite have the brand recognition that we have now. So, of course, I'll say that we had it a lot harder than the reps do now because, you know, the phone calls.
Right, right. You remember the old days, 2003?
Yeah, walking to work 5 foot up and up, yeah,
up and
5 feet
right.
of snow.
That's
and,
exactly right. Everything was uphill.
But, yeah, so it was just a matter of hard work. You know, I had some great leadership at the time. You know, we had a great culture, which always kept us going, and we still maintain that. Through the years, we expanded. We always like to promote from within, so I was fortunate to benefit from that. Mm-hmm. And when management opportunity presented itself and we expanded and opened up more sales teams, I was asked to lead one of those teams.
The interesting thing about it, too, is that the growth of this company. I mean, it's always in the Inc., the fastest growing companies 9 years in a row. It's a company that's 20, 25, 27% growth year after year. As a general manager of a sales unit, how do you make sure, what are the challenges that go with that kind of meteoric growth?
There are a lot of challenges, just like any small, medium-sized business that grows. I think we experience the same challenges, just trying to scale. You know, we're fortunate that we provide technology, and we use a lot of that same technology that we provide to our customers to enhance our and optimize the business, so we can do so without adding overhead necessarily. Biggest challenge for us, I would say, is really finding good people.
Mm-hmm. Are you hiring?
Well, of course, we always are.
Because Dave is looking.
That has to be.
I am.
I would assume if you're having that kind of growth, that really is the challenge, to be able to staff that growth.
Yeah, you know, we, again, try to promote from within. So when you grow at that rate, promoting people, you know, fast enough, it's difficult. So, you know, occasionally we have to go on the outside and bring people in and teach them our culture. But, you know, it's a great problem to have.
Yeah. The other question would just be the product itself, the technology, and when it comes to office technology, and the business that you're in has changed dramatically, like much technology. I mean, from 1999 to 2019, the needs of offices, the needs of small and medium-sized businesses has changed dramatically just because of the speed and the way that we work. How do you make sure your company is at the cutting edge or knowing what technology is what a company needs at this juncture?
Well, we're constantly talking with other technology companies to figure out who the best of breed are to partner with. So we, again, use a lot of that technology internally, and we'll test it, and we'll use it to solve business challenges internally first. And then once we evaluate the best software, hardware, and we bring that to the table for our customers and apply it. And It's been very, very successful for us, and we're our own best case study.
You know? Not only the company continues to evolve as well, but you're willing to share the success and the advice. The Impact Optimized Summit. Have you done it this year yet?
We have not. It's actually, when I look out to the right, you're
looking out at Navy Pier.
Navy Pier. We're going to be doing that on August 8th. We did it last year at Impact Field in Rosemont, which is a new facility. Huge success, and we're expecting that to increase about tenfold this year.
It's a business conference, focuses on IT, but the way the company evolves, I'm sure the summit and the conference has evolved as well, right?
Absolutely, and we had a great keynote last year, and then this year we're bringing in Robert Hirschbeck, who is...
One of the Sharks!
Yeah, very well known from Shark Tank, so if anybody's a fan of that show, they know Robert. Great business leader, expert on cybersecurity. We're super excited to have
ImpactMyBiz.com, is that where you get information on that and everything?
Correct. And then there's a specific website dedicated to that summit, ImpactOptimize.com.
All right, last word, Justin.
This segment's called The Download in Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank. But Chicago is a big part of it. You guys have obviously invested. You just talked about some of the naming rights in the stadiums in Rosemont, but also as we see your advertising all over Chicago sports. What does it mean to you guys to be a Chicago company, to be a part of the ecosystem here in Chicago business?
Well, it means a lot. You know, we're very invested in the community. We do a lot for the community. For me, you know, it's amazing to see us go from, again, when I started back in 03, we had two offices and employed probably 25 people. So now we have around 550 employees, a lot of those being local to Chicago. So it's been a lot of fun to see the growth and see the people develop and really be able to provide for their families. And then our customers are super loyal. So it's like it's a family atmosphere. It always has been. It always will be. And even though we've grown to be a much bigger company, we still have maintained that.
It's a great Chicago story.
Yeah.
You ought to be proud.
I am. I'm very fortunate.
And thanks for getting up and coming over here in the cold and being on The Download. But sponsored again by who?
Sponsored by Signature Bank.
Yeah, and we have a electrical blanket with a really long cord we'll give you for coming over.
I appreciate that.
All right, good to see you, man.
All right, thanks, guys.
Corey.
The FBI has arrested Roger Stone, the president's political advisor. Exclusive footage you're looking at right now from CNN as the FBI arrives at Roger Stone's residence in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, taking him into custody. We understand he will be arraigned in Fort Lauderdale later this morning, indicted on 7 counts, 1 count of obstruction, 5 counts of making false statements, 1 count of witness tampering.
We've asked Pat Brady to put his lawyer pants on. He was a prosecutor. He chased all the bad guys. He's read 1,001 indictments, and he can cut through this stuff to get to the core of it. So, good morning, Pat, and thanks for doing this on short notice, obviously. How are you?
Great. Hey, note to self, if you ever think you're going to be indicted, sleep in your jogging suit because you don't want to be in the lockup in your pajamas like Roger Stone right now.
Did they take him out in his pajamas?
Yeah, it looked like it. You saw the film. It was dark, but they went in there with a lot of agents and yanked him out, and accordingly to the press counts in his pajamas. So anyway,
all right, so quickly on that, it appears to be, for an old guy in Harry Potter glasses, it appeared to be over the top. I'm not criticizing the FBI, but why would they go with guys in helmets?
Yeah,
and
full tactical unit.
Yeah, full tactical gear, all of that.
You do that. I asked the same question 25 years ago to an agent. He said you have to go in any circumstance with overwhelming force because you don't know what the guy you're going after is going to do.
Okay.
That's just common. That's standard operating procedure. Because you're going with two guys, maybe somebody flips out, pulls a gun. You only got two guys there. You got to make sure everything's secure. That's why they did what they did.
Right, but like when Manafort and some of these others were allowed to walk in, they didn't give this to Stone because they thought he'd destroy evidence or flee, or what would be the purpose of that?
A lot of reasons, and there's always the discussion about that. Back in my day, I arrested everybody because if you're going to arrest people for small crimes, you got to arrest white collar guys too. So I think that's always a discussion within the Bureau. I'm not sure if it has any significance.
Okay.
With Stone, he's at the coast of Florida. Maybe they thought he was going to run. Who knows? And Stone's kind of one of those dark actors you probably can't trust.
Oh, sure.
So you might not trust him to show him if you tipped him off.
Yeah, he makes Trump look honest. All right, so Roger Stone indicted on obstruction of justice and witness tampering, and he's in a lot of trouble here.
Yeah, 7 counts of obstruction, 5 lying to Congress, 1 witness tampering. Here's the takeaways from the indictment. This indictment affirmatively states that Stone, through an intermediator, was indirectly communicating with WikiLeaks on the documents that the Russians had hacked from the Democratic National Committee and were leaked throughout the course of the campaign. So the big thing is it ties a high-level Trump operative, campaign operative, to the WikiLeaks leak. What it is not is a substantive indictment on conspiracy with the Russians to interfere with the election results. The way I would put this is a marathon's 26 miles. We're at mile 20, but now we have a high-level Trump official, very close friend of the president, who communicated with the campaign and him all the time, who is indirectly communicating with WikiLeaks, who was working with the Russians with these stolen documents.
All right, so the I must have misread it because I thought it was plural, as in, I don't know the indictment in front of me, but it talked about more than one inside Trump campaign inner circle type. Was it just one?
They had communication with a lot of them.
So, but, I mean, we know that circle's small, and we know some of them are already indicted, but doesn't this bode poorly for, I don't know, Don Jr.?
Oh, yeah. I'm just more, but again, this is a process indictment versus, not that it's not significant, because it is, he's going to jail, but it's not the smoking gun on the conspiracy with the Russians yet. But that being said, this does not in any way preclude Bob Mueller from going back and re-indicting this guy and putting him in a larger indictment. If you really watch this and kind of look back at the timeline, and we talked about 2 years ago, he's masterfully putting this case together.
Yeah, it appears that he's not too wrapped up in what we think and how fast we want him to go. He's doing his job.
You can compare him to Ken Starr, who came out every day with a cup of coffee and a goofy smile on his face, and we saw him every day. You never see Mueller. You never hear from him. Just doing his job.
All right, so we're going to break this up. If you're available a little later in the program, and Joel will talk to you off the air about this, we want you to come back after you have a little more time to digest the rest of the story.
Yeah, it's a long indictment. It's a lot of facts in it, but that's the sum of it.
All right, thanks. Pat Brady, more on him later on in the show. And we'll come back, and we'll talk to Paul Conrad about how friggin' cold it is. Again, a technical weather term in just a few minutes. But the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is where you're going to find Steve coming up next on 720 WGN. Search the internet. You can see Paul Conrad dance to this. Hi, buddy.
Hey, how are you?
Nice to talk to you. Thanks for doing this, because normally we don't talk seriously about anything, including when we're, alone.
Yeah, I know it.
But
I've been
this
working
is
on that step all change, by the way, which has gotten a lot better. You'll be glad to know.
Well, send me the video.
All right.
I'll be the judge. This cold is going to get worse?
Yeah. You know, you got to live for today.
Apparently, if this is good news.
Yeah, today, we'll get to 5, which is, it's not one.
And it's the best we're going to do for days?
Well, we'll get into the teens over the weekend. And
okay.
Probably we'll get to 20 on Monday. So a lot to celebrate temperature-wise on Monday. But then like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we get a kick in the shorts. And daytime high readings will be like 0, 2, 4, somewhere in there for Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So
I don't remember it being that cold. And by don't remember, I mean ever.
Yeah. I got to believe it's happened. My memory's bad. I'm having a hard time remembering this last week.
I'm looking at an extended forecast here, which says Monday 29.
Ooh.
Tuesday 5.
Yeah.
Wednesday's high, -5.
Yeah.
That's not a high.
It's a little tricky.
That's a bonus low.
Yeah. Yeah.
So is this that polar vortex thing?
Yeah. Good for you, Steve.
Well, weatherman, grumpy old man. Thanks.
Yeah. You were great in that, by the way.
Thanks,
I don't know if enough people. Does your audience, are they aware of your work?
You know me.
Did you get an award nomination
aware.
Or something?
I turned down an Oscar that year.
I turned down a nomination. One of the few noble people out there.
Well,
actors.
I just feel like as an actor, we shouldn't be in a contest. All of our work is valid.
Right. It has meaning regardless. And listen, you knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, thanks.
That was really good.
I was my own low pressure system.
Yeah.
So how does this end?
Well,
I mean,
it's not going to end well. I mean, all of us are going to die at some point.
Well, no, I don't mean the big picture.
Oh.
I mean this cold snap. How does it end?
How does it end?
Yes.
Well, here's my prediction. I got to believe that come May and June, it's going to be sunny and warmer.
You think so?
And there's going to be flowers that are going to be coming out of the ground. And there's going to be grass that's turning greener. And it's going to be a beautiful day.
I don't know that I buy that.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
And I promise by July, we'll be in the 40s.
Well, I'm looking at a long-term forecast here. February 11th is the next time we'll have a daytime high over freezing, 33 degrees.
Listen, you can focus on the negative if you want to focus on the negative. I choose to look on the bright side of things. Now, listen, you said Monday 29?
29.
I don't know where you're getting that 29, but it's a nice number.
Well, what do you have for Monday?
I think we've got like 21.
21.
But it's in the 20s, so that's really nice. Now,
what do you have for Wednesday? Do you have a minus 5 high, or are you more optimistic about
Wednesday?
I'm
more optimistic. I think we have two.
2 degrees.
Two for our high on Wednesday.
Listen, I'm going with their forecast.
Zero.
We've got zero.
Zero. Sounds like we just lost 2 degrees.
We lost it. But, you know, it's better than minus 5.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, we like to bring hope to the hopeless.
Who is your weather winger there? We should give her credit.
I got Morgan Kolkmeyer here next to me.
Well, what is, Morgan is, you know, what is she doing? Why can't she make it warmer?
Let me ask her. Is there any particular reason why you can't make it warmer around here, Morgan? A lot of people are not happy.
Tell her I'm asking.
Cochran wants to know. She says blame Skilling.
See, it's weird because what I heard in that was blow it out your butt.
Yeah,
it's the weather.
Pretty much it.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
We do have snow on Monday also with that high in the 20s.
How much snow?
How much?
Yeah. Well, that's Morgan.
How much snow do you think we're going to get on Monday? I think it's going to be like, I'm going to generically say about 6 inches.
Yeah, someone will see.
But I think some places could see up to 10 inches of snow. Some areas could see 4. But I think it's going to snow on Monday.
So we get a bunch of snow Monday, and then it's going to be zero on Wednesday.
Yeah. Isn't that great? Like, that's winter.
Well,
people love four seasons, you know? That's why you live in the Midwest. You get all four seasons.
Well, I blame Morgan.
Yeah, I have been also. Yeah. She can be a monster.
Well, this is her fault. Yeah. I mean, clearly. Is Skilling okay?
I think so. You know, he was in Hawaii and Alaska. The guy gets around.
Right.
He does all these square dance conventions. And
that's what he's going to?
Yeah, he is. The man likes to cut the rug. And so I think he's like a regional champion in Alaska or something like that, but he tears it up.
All right. Well, on that happy note, we will wait for that video as well. And I thank you for doing this. Because you didn't have to do this. I mean, you get asked to do a lot of things.
Yeah.
Didn't have to do this.
At least you know how I feel about you, Steve.
All right. Love you back.
I love you, too. Let's close this with a little song.
Which one?
How about Amazing Grace?
Amazing Grace. I don't think the public needs to hear anymore.
All right. That's the only verse I do anyways.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. Love you. I'll see you when I get home.
All right.
There you go.
That's always the creepiest part. Paul's on TV this morning. Morgan's on TV this morning, and they're figuring out why it's so friggin' cold.
The Steve Cochran Show. Cochran Show.
724, most valuable person on the planet is Caroline Senatar. Now, you know, when you buy a house, You get to know a real estate agent well. She's a wonderful real estate agent for my daughter, but just in casual conversations with her, found out she lost her dad to cancer. And then the story got deeper and found out she's a bit of a hero in this area. Good morning, Carolyn.
Hi, Steve. Thank you so much. You are so kind.
Well, nice
of
you.
First of all, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate the opportunity just to make people aware of the types of cancer that were caused across our entire country.
Well, it's nice of you to be on. Your dad lost his fight to cancer after being exposed environmentally to a carcinogen, which nobody knew about, right?
Absolutely. So this article started as a true story of my dad's life. My dad was a nuclear physicist. He worked at a national lab in the radiation material lab during the Cold War in the 1950s. I had no idea at all what he did until I started doing research for this article. But he actually helped with the design of the Polaris nuclear warhead. He worked at Lawrence Livermore Lab and at the Vallecetus Atomic Lab, which carried out radiation experiments. But my dad was actually one of just many, many workers across the country that died after unknowingly being exposed. And so I originally wrote this article and did this research calling it Cold War Patriots, thinking it was only the time between 1940 and maybe 1970.
Okay.
But in 2016, it was actually expanded to include sites up to 1995. Which is only 24 years ago.
Right, and it's called the EEIOCPA, the Energy Employees Occupational Illness Compensation Program. This is a government agency funded, well, funded in government. It's not a word I should use right now, words I should use right now, but you know what I'm talking about. And this is something that provides a backstop for people who have gone through the nightmare of losing a loved one. And obviously, there's expenses involved with somebody fighting that battle. And when you lose somebody, there's more. So you found this by doing a lot of research when you shouldn't have to do a lot of research. Everybody should know about it.
So the EEOICPA has the worst acronym in the world.
Yeah,
I mean,
it does.
Seriously, can you say it three times fast?
Not so much.
But my goal, honestly, is to create a public awareness campaign. My article and research literally is dedicated to the tens and thousands of workers who are exposed to 17,000 toxic substances. And it's literally 300 locations and plus more than 300 locations across the United States. The EEOICPA is dedicated to compensating current and former workers, but it also includes spouses and children. And that's huge, because obviously if someone was working in someone in the 1960s, they're probably not around anymore. However, if somebody was working in 1995, hopefully they still are.
Sure.
So this energy EEOICPA is dedicated to doing this. And yes, it is a compensation program act. It is quote unquote funded. I know what you're saying completely, but it was funded in 2000. And the problem is, I honestly don't think many people even realize what it was. I didn't even know what it was until a couple of years ago myself. And that's really what I'm trying to do, is to get the word out so that people realize what it is, how it can help. There's literally tens of thousands of people who can do this. It's funded and it's working with four government agencies. In Illinois itself, there were sites like the Allied Chemical Corporation,
right.
Bloxon Chemical. I mean, all the national labs have possible exposure. It is amazing. You don't think it's in your own backyard, and then you realize, yeah, it is. It's in Massachusetts. It's in Westinghouse. It's in New Jersey. It's everywhere across the entire country.
It's amazing, too, because, you know, especially when people are going through treatment, there seems to be a lot of privatized in services, and whether it be consulting or whether it be wellness or whether it be just treatment, and to know that there's services available at the government, I don't think a lot of people know that. So how do you get the word out that there are services from the government that are available for people that may not have known about it before?
That's exactly. Thank you so much. That is exactly what I am trying to do. Is that we stumbled on this. We found out about it, and it's an enormous process to go through, because as in any government program run by four federal agencies, toggling through their website, getting through the site matrix, understanding how everything works is daunting enough, let alone to do it. I have written an article, and I've done the research, and what I've done is Pete actually said that he was going to post this.
Yeah, we're going to put it up with a podcast for so people can link directly to the research that you did and the story of your dad.
Exactly. Thank you, Steve. And basically, what it will do is it will show you all of the links. It is called the EEOICPA. I've done extensive research on it, but it also includes all of the other links to the Department of Labor, Department of Justice. It is amazing what is out there. And as in anything in life, if you don't know it's out there, how do you ask? If you don't know what to ask for something, you never even think about it.
Yeah,
so my hope is to make this a huge public awareness campaign, because I want people to know it's out there, and I want to help as many people as possible. I truly do, because it's incredible that there's so many different types of cancer that were possibly exposed to these 18,000 chemicals. And if you don't know about it, you're never going to find out.
And by the way, this is not necessarily something where the government knew they were putting nuclear physicists and custodial workers and everybody in between at risk. But that doesn't matter. What matters is you lost somebody you love, or somebody's fighting from something they got back.
Correct. Steve, I truly believe that no one had any idea in the 1950s, 40s, 60s that there was any possible long-term exposure consequences. There is absolutely, absolutely correct on that. However, the reality of it is that unfortunately the exposure did happen, and it was unknown, and clearly this program came about because of this. And my thought and my goal is honestly just to make people aware of it, because it does affect, absolutely, it's amazing what it affects. It affects metal workers. It affects universities. It affects not only lab sites, but it crisscrosses across literally manufacturing plants, plant workers, railroad workers, anybody was not spared because no one knew the long-term consequences. That's the long and the short of it.
Yeah, and it's important stuff to know, important stuff to understand, but also I just think, and I told you this off the air, it's just a great legacy for your dad and your family that you've done this, because it's a great message to put forward. There are places you can go, there are avenues you can go that can help you. You know, I mean, it's therapy in some ways, but more important to that, it's actual Band-Aids financially and things that could help you get through a really difficult time. So yeah. At the bare minimum, read the story. The EEIOCPA will put it up with your podcast of this segment, and we'll go from there, Caroline.
Steve, thank you so much. Pete, everybody, Justin, thank you so much for having me up. Thank you for posting it. I truly hope it just helps someone out there. How's that?
Real estate agent by day, hero daughter by night and weekends. How about that? All right, Caroline. Then thanks for the help with Amy, too. Hold the line, if you would. So she's Amy's real estate agent. You start talking to people, and you start to find out, you know, stuff about their life. And as Maureen always says, why do you interview every human being you meet? It's just my instinct. But in this case, we all like Caroline very much and started to talk to her, found out about it, and she was nice enough to send me the piece that she wrote. Yeah. And it's got all that. She's done all the legwork for you.
In this case, it worked out. But Maureen's right. Most of the time, just stop. That's the advice I get from my wife whenever I do it. She's like, we're not doing a talk show.
Well, it never ends.
Like, yeah, but see, this is you're right now, this great interview and this great finding out about Caroline's story, I'm going to use that as well. I'm going to go back to my wife today. I'm going to be like, Steve found out a great story about something that's changing for cancer survivors, and I'm going to keep doing what I do and doing a talk show off air, so deal with it.
Yeah, and sometimes when you make your wife sit under lights at home between two ferns, that's when they get really touchy.
Can I get this lav? We need to lav you up.
It's the Energy Employees Occupational Illness Compensation Program, the EOICPA. The
EEOICPA.
OICPA, again, linked with the podcast of the same. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to come back. Chris Collins, head coach of your Northwestern Wildcats basketball team, with the greatest broadcaster of all time. He's a legendary Hall of Famer himself. Walk of Famer, Hall of Famer. He's Dave Bennett. We'll talk about where Northwestern's going,
yep,
literally and figuratively. Dean on the phone from L.A. after 8 o'clock. Pat Brady updates us on the Roger Stone indictment story. And we keep talking to the mayoral candidates, Lori Lightfoot this morning.
Lori Lightfoot, that's right. All that coming up here on the Steve Cochran Show.
Three straight on. Goal! Roger Stone, good ball game over, and the Wildcats win.
This sounds like a football moment. In fact, we're going to talk basketball. Because this is a bad night to play basketball outdoors. I mean, they should definitely go in the new building.
They should do it like the NHL, like the Winter Classic. They
do one outdoor game a year?
Basketball, one outdoor game a year.
Yeah.
What do you think, Dave?
One outdoor playground game a year.
Yeah.
They do it on the near west side, rusted out hoops, and a pothole right in the middle of
there's
the concrete.
There's a park right by my house.
I'm sold. I think that
would be cool.
Great concept.
Coach Chris Collins joins us now. Coach, when was the last time you shot outside on a rusted hoop with no net?
It's probably been a while. I had the hoop outside, but I do have a net on it, so it's probably doesn't qualify.
When you were hanging out with Coach K and doing the fine work you did there, did Coach K have a hoop at his house? Like, if you ever went over for a barbecue?
Yeah, no, he's got a sweet setup out there. He's got a nice outdoor court, and he's got a bunch of grandkids, so they were always over there playing. So when we'd be team outings, we'd have some outdoor fun out there. So definitely had a few of those days.
But did the grandkids have to stop and look at a dry erase board where he plotted out a play?
not that I was aware of. They did not have to, but I'm sure there were a few of those sessions where they had to listen to the professor.
Yeah, Coach Collins, I think the question we all have is, at Coach K's house, is it nice, or is he screwing the actual hoop to the back of his garage? Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah.
Is he going old school?
He's an old school guy, but I have to say that his hoop is pretty nice these days. He's done pretty well for himself.
It's funny. Yeah, I heard he's made some dough. You know, it's funny, and we're actually going to talk about Northwestern basketball, Dave, here in a second.
Okay.
But it's funny, the worst full court I ever saw and it was a nice home, but it's like a half circular drive.
Yeah.
Had the basket on top of the garage door, and then a post with a basket around the circular drive. So if you want to go a full court break, you're actually running in a semicircle.
Nice. There's nothing better than the actual hoop on the garage, because then if it's a muddy day and the ball
and your mom gets mad,
you get the little circle, the mud circles on the garage door.
Yeah, and your mom yells at you.
That's
good
basketball,
times.
Coach Collins. That's basketball.
All right, so Coach, you've had more than your unfair share of injuries so far. Everybody gets them, but boy, you looked good last Friday.
Yeah, no, it was really good to get a big win over Indiana at home. We had a heartbreaker with them, last time we played in Bloomington, our first game, lost by two, and it was a big game, and we've kind of learned one of our really good freshmen, Pete Nance, was going to be out for a while the day of the game, and it was a pretty awesome story. We had Aaron Falzone, who's in his fourth year of the program, who came in and was a high-level recruit and has really been hurt for the upward part of 3 years. Hip injuries, ankle injuries, knee injuries. It's just been a really tough go for him. Threw him in the game, and what do we have? He goes 6 for 7 from the three-point line and really helps us win a big game. So it was a pretty awesome story. I actually got emotional about it afterwards because, seeing what that kid has gone through for the last 3 years and how hard he's worked to get himself back on the court to go out there under those circumstances on the big stage and play that well. It was a pretty amazing night.
The funny thing was that I noticed, Chris, because I'm looking across at your bench, and when he hit the first one, just the way your bench erupted, and it was that way for each of the three-pointers he made the rest of the night.
Yeah, I mean, he's such a loved player on the team. The guys respect so much his approach. I mean, he came in, like I said, he was a top 100 player coming out of high school. Had a really good freshman year for us, averaged almost 9-10 points a game. Had a couple 20-point games as a freshman. The future looked incredibly bright. And then had to redshirt his sophomore year because of injury. Last year was hurt pretty much the whole season. Comes into this year, hurts an ankle, misses our first 10 games. Just couldn't stay healthy. And he's worked so hard. He lives in the training room with our medical staff, does all kinds of exercises and rehab and hours upon hours just to try to get himself ready to play, and was just waiting for an opportunity. And he got it the other night, and the guys were just, everyone was so happy for him because of how hard he's worked.
You lost three heartbreakers. Your first two Big Ten games, one at Indiana, one to Michigan, which was as close as anybody came to knocking off the Wolverines until Wisconsin finally did it last week, and Oklahoma. And yet, here you are after a rough start, and the team's playing well and managed to kind of keep everything in sight. How tough is that to do when you lose a couple of tough games like that?
Yeah, it's not easy, to not lose your confidence, especially this year in the Big Ten. I've been here now, this is my sixth season, and our conference is as good top to bottom as it's been since I've been at Northwestern. I mean, from 1 through 14, every team is good. Every team's capable of beating you if you don't play really well. And you can even play really well on a given night and not win. And, I think you're seeing it with pretty much every team in the league except for Michigan and Michigan State. Everybody's kind of going through ruts where, you might lose two or three in a row, or in our case, we're 1-5 through six games. And, you're just trying to have the guys stay the course. Like, guys, just stick with it. Let's find a way to win our next one and see if we can string something together. And, we were sitting 1-5. We went to Rutgers last week. It was a big game for us. They had been playing really well. They beat Ohio State and Nebraska on their home floor. We found a way to get a win, came home, and stamped it with the win over Indiana. So now all of a sudden you're back to 3-5, and we have a great opportunity ahead of us tomorrow at Wisconsin, another really good team. And you just got to kind of stay the course and keep yourself in the mix and hopefully find a way to get a win. Because I tell you what, guys, it's not easy this year. The Big Ten, the league is really tough.
I was talking to somebody the other day about how much the game has changed and how there's so many competitive teams. And, the on any given night, anybody can win cliche has probably never applied more And we look back. You know, there's only been 7 undefeated national champs in college basketball. And your dad's got 10 years on me, Coach, but I'm old enough to remember as a little kid the UCLA run. And they were 30-0 2 years in a row before finally losing to Digger at Notre Dame. But the last undefeated national champ, Dave, do you know who it was?
I want to say it was Indiana.
Indiana in 1975.
Yeah.
75, 76, that's how long it's been. So you can get beat up pretty good, but there are teams that lose quite a few, get into the tournament, and then it's the new season. Anything's possible.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's about now. It's as, and then you see in the tournament, when you get there, anything can happen because of the parity. You know, we saw it with Loyola last year. I mean, they got hurt. They were a really good team. And they ride the wave to all the way to the Final Four. So, you know, you just got to win enough during the year to keep yourself relevant. And, you know, this year our league, I'm telling you, at the end of the day, I would not be surprised to see upwards of 10 Big Ten teams potentially go to the NCAA tournament out of 14 in our league. I mean, that the league is that good, and we just want to try to play well enough and get enough wins along the way to put ourselves in that conversation when we get to the end.
And by the way, that's up from 4 last year. That's a pretty significant jump.
Coach, you've got the big game this week up in Madison against Wisconsin. Then you go to Maryland, which is one of one of the best teams in the country. You know, and this is the heart of that Big Ten schedule. How important are the next two games? If you have a good showing on the road, that has to go a long way to how committees in the future will look at the Cats.
Yeah, I mean, winning on the road is huge. I mean, that's, you know, especially this year. And, you know, first and foremost, you got to win at home. You know, that's something that's paramount. You got to take care of your home turf. And, you know, for us, we lost to Michigan. We had a tough loss at home to Iowa. So we have two conference losses at home. And like I told the guys, if you lose a home game, you got to try to make it up somewhere along the way on the road. And we were able to get one at Rutgers, which was huge. And, you know, now we have this little two-game stretch against two just outstanding teams. I mean, Wisconsin last Saturday beats Michigan, who's undefeated on their home floor. And, you know, they arguably have the best player in the conference in Ethan Happ, who's just a tremendous, tremendous college player. And then Maryland, I think, is still third place in the league. You know, they've been playing great, and another tough play, really tough place to play. So we have our hands full. We know that. You know, want the guys to go out there with confidence on the road and stick together and, you know, see what we can do. And if we can find a way to get one of these games and get a win, it'd be huge for our resume, no doubt about it.
Back home with Penn State, and then you got a nice middle February tune-up with Rutgers and Wisconsin and Minnesota at home later in the month. Lots of good dates for people to see the new building, so get out there and support Northwestern basketball.
Yeah, no, the arena's great, guys. I tell you, it's a fun place to watch a game. It gets loud. The amenities are awesome. So for those that haven't been out to check it out, it's and the level of basketball is great.
Tremendous.
I mean, you're getting high-level ball and a really fun place to watch a game. Come out and check us out. We could use your support.
You know, you coach all the time, and I wonder, do you ever have time to listen to playback of a game and give notes to Dave Ennett?
I actually do at times. I love listening to Dave. He's the best in the business. So, and sometimes when I'm struggling, I need to get some advice. So I got to listen to his broadcast to find out what I'm doing wrong.
But you know, in the same way, a kid might be off on his pull up jumper, or you know, a fadeaway, or a little stutter step move, or maybe a baseline three. When you hear Dave make those calls, do you ever go, Dave? Maybe a breath here, an inflection there. Do you hear those kind of moments, Coach?
I tell you what, he's pretty flawless, Steve.
Yeah.
He's pretty flawless.
That's what I think. I look at him and think flawless.
I'd love to be critical, but the guy knows what he's doing, and he very rarely makes those kind of mistakes.
How about notes for me? You got any notes for me?
Yeah, I would need about 10 to 15 more minutes, though. So
show's over.
I know you guys have a break. You know there's a news update coming up, and so we're going to have to probably save it for next time.
Have fun, Coach. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Coach.
All right, thanks. Guys. You guys are the best. See
you later. See you tomorrow.
It's Chris Goins.
He's not wrong. He got his 100th win. We should mention that. But he's got his 100th win the other night. 100 wins. He's in his sixth year. He's the fastest in Northwestern history to get to 100, only the third coach to do it in the history of the program.
Here's what I like about him. He's smart, he's funny, and he's a great coach. God, does he bleed for that team. you know, you look at his dad freaking out in the stands. You wonder where it came from, right? Because on the sidelines, he's losing his mind. Yeah. He's entertaining to watch.
Well, you know, college basketball coaches in general, I think if you watch them, watch their facial expressions, watch their body language during a game, watch how they work the refs. It's really, it's a whole nother show going on. It's the game within the game.
Yeah, but you know, in the case of Chris, we know a little bit. You never feel like it's not real every step of it. Whereas some of these other coaches, you go, oh, "Come on."
when he says he got emotional talking about,
he wasn't kidding.
When he was on BTN right after the game, and he's standing right in front of us, you could tell he was getting really kind of choked up talking about this kid. By the time he talked to us on the radio a few minutes later, he'd sort of he was still a little choked up. I think. Yeah,
I love the energy of a coach that's up, but there's also a space in my heart for the Phil Jackson just lounge sit. That was my favorite look. The coach is like, Michael's doing his thing. I'll just stretch out on this.
Phil would occasionally leave.
Yeah.
He'd just leave. He'd come back at the end of the game. Listen, next time you're in New York, you might want to stay at Ken Griffin's place. Details coming up.
The teams from WGN Radio and WGN TV invite you to the biggest stair climb in Chicago, the Fight for Air Climb at Presidential Towers, presented by United Healthcare on Sunday, March 10th. Your first step, visit fightforairclimb.org to register, then start training. Why do we do this? Because the fight for clean air and healthy lungs belongs to all of us. You and your team can climb 1, 2, 3, or all four towers. That's 2,340 steps. The American Lung Association, Fight for Air Climb at Presidential Towers.
You want to know who the surprise entrants are for your Fight for Air Climb?
Yeah, you never told us.
Maureen Cochran and Ross Cochran.
Hey! Really?
Yeah. Mother, son.
Yes. Really? Playing that up for like 2 weeks, and you're like, yeah, you don't want to know who's going? Maureen.
I had to get clearance. Clarence.
Yeah, but you should have done some production, gone in with Duffy, made a whole thing about it.
Ross said he didn't want to make a big deal about it.
Oh, this is great. No Abigail?
Not yet. She's considering it. But
I'll carry her.
That's great that they're climbing. That's awesome.
Yeah, they're joining.
You're going to carry her, Mary?
And then I'll pass her to you.
No, I don't think so. I don't see that happening for either one of you.
We'll just pass her back and forth.
Coming up, Stories of Matter with Steve Grzanich in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. And Ken Griffin now owns the most expensive home in America. By the way, it's not built yet. He paid $238 million, sight unseen, for what amounts to four floors of condo space in a very private place at 220 Central Park South in New York. The place will be delivered is essentially a white block, and the four floors will be custom designed.
He gets to customize it.
As he should for $238 million. He also owns record-setting houses around the world, and we'll get into some of these later, but I don't think this is still a record. He had number 9 Walton in Chicago, which he paid $60 million for in early 2017. I think somebody surpassed that.
I'm sure. And he's got a big place in London.
He's got a place in London. He's got a place in Miami Beach with Kanye and Kim.
Hey, why not, right?
I'm a little worried about how he's spending his money.
If I were Republicans in the state of Illinois, I'd be like, he's the major donor.
Yeah.
That money's all tied up now.
He's worth $10 billion, but if he keeps buying houses like this, he and I are going to have to sit down and talk.
State senator down in Cairo is like, you know, I'm not going to get that $2,500 check from Ken Griffin.
If you added all these up, though, it's not even come to a billion yet. So
he's got more.
You know what they say about $238 million like that? It's a gateway home. It's going to open the door to more crazy.
Well, good for him. Good for a Chicagoan to have the most expensive property in New York.
Yeah, and he's a good guy. Have you met him?
I have not.
He's a good guy. I hugged him and took his wallet, and he wanted it back. It was weird.
I love you. He's a good guy. He's a guy you can have a beer with.
He's just one of those $10 billion guys. Here are the sounds of matter, the top 5 at 5 from the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis, weekday afternoon, 720 WGN Chicago, including today, where they'll be live from SoxFest. Smart speaker users say play WGN radio on TuneIn. Dean's live from L.A. in a few minutes. First, from HearingHealthCenter.com, Steve has news on his good friend Roger Stone.
-6 degrees in Chicago this morning. The wind chill is -25. Former Trump advisor Roger Stone has been arrested by the FBI. That sound from CNN video of the arrest this morning in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, an indictment by the special counsel grand jury. Seven counts accuses Stone of obstructing an official proceeding, making false statements, and witness tampering. Here's ABC's chief legal analyst, Dan Abrams.
This is related to WikiLeaks, and the key phrases, I think, from this indictment are that a senior Trump official was directed to contact Stone about additional releases. Then in August, Stone is requesting specific stolen emails from particular dates. In October, a high-ranking Trump official is asking about the status of future releases. An associate of a Trump official tells Stone after the fact, well done.
Stone is scheduled to appear in a federal court in Fort Lauderdale at 10 o'clock Chicago time. More information is emerging about the scandal surrounding indicted Chicago alderman Ed Burke. The Sun-Times reports the developer of Chicago's old main post office is cooperating with feds in working to build a corruption case against Burke. A file on the post office was seized from Burke's finance committee suite at City Hall during a raid back in November. Burke voted last year in favor of a tax break for the post office project. Community activists spent the night raising awareness about Chicago's homeless situation. Activist Andrew Holmes slept outside of City Hall, where wind chills reached 22 below zero.
They need homes. They need their apartments. They need a place to stay. So we just taking a stand as we normally do, right here in front of City Hall, right here in the doorsteps.
And last night was also the city's annual headcount of the homeless population. Hundreds of volunteers joined city workers for the tally. Last year, they counted nearly 5,400 homeless people in Chicago. Bail has been set at $250,000 for a suburban volleyball coach accused of installing a hidden camera to record people in a bathroom at an athletic training facility in Carroll Stream. Michael Ledke is charged with unauthorized videotaping and possession of child pornography. Prosecutors say the Streamwood man installed the camera in a restroom at the DuPage Training Academy, where he ran a volleyball program. Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox announcing that she's in support of legalizing pot in Illinois. She says her office will no longer be pursuing misdemeanor marijuana charges, and rather she'll be seeking diversion treatment for addicts. As for those with previous pot conviction, Fox says her office will be seeking to expunge convictions of those with those misdemeanor charges.
Failing to take action that provides relief to those who are already have a marijuana conviction is not justice.
And now with Community Corners, here's Ryan Burrow.
The Gaylord Building at 200 West 8th Street in Lockport is a limestone warehouse. It was built in 1838, originally storing canal construction materials, but later housed commercial businesses. Today it serves as a gateway to the I&M Canal National Heritage Corridor. Visitors can explore the heritage of the region with various exhibits and eat at the renowned Public Landing Restaurant. I'm Ryan Burrow with Community Corners on WGN Radio.
Now WGN Sports with Dave Ennett.
All-Star Weekend is here in the National Hockey League. The festivities are underway tonight. The skills competition, the All-Star game tomorrow, and making his eighth appearance, the Blackhawks' Patrick Kane.
It's still fun to see that number get a little bit higher every time, and I don't know, I just remember when I was a kid, I really enjoyed that weekend, you know, watching the skills competition and watching the All-Star game as well, so try to put on a good show for the fans.
Our Xfinity Blackhawks report, Kane will get a few days to relax before the Hawks resume the schedule a week from tonight in Buffalo. Tonight, the Bulls host the Clippers. The NBA All-Star Game is next month in Charlotte. LeBron James and Giannis Antetokounmpo are the captains. The Cubs have added an arm to their bullpen. Brad Brock, who split last season between Baltimore and Atlanta, he brings a 3.08 career ERA. Sox Fest gets going today. Current players, prospects, alumni, coaches, management, and broadcasters from the White Sox gathering at the Hilton Chicago. Yes, Eloy Jimenez will be there. So will Ozzie Guillen for the first time in 8 years. And WGN Radio is live from Sox Fest beginning at 3 o'clock this afternoon. College basketball, UIC a winner over Detroit Mercy, 79-67. And 6th-ranked Michigan State won its 21st straight Big Ten game, 82-67 at number 19 Iowa. Spartans are 18-2 and 9-0 in the Big Ten. We'll bring you Northwestern at Wisconsin tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock. On the home of the Blackhawks, the Northwestern Wild. Wildcats and White Sox baseball. Dave Ennett, WGN Sports.
At Joe Rizza Acura in Orland Park, you save more. That's because every new Acura in stock is always on sale. And they're ringing in the new year with even more savings. Now through January 31st, you can take home a new 2019 Acura RDX, just $374 a month. Or a new 2019 Acura MDX for just $398 a month. With new year savings going on now, there's never been a better time to buy. Joe Rizza Acura on 159th Street in Orland Park. Visit RizzaAcura.com now.
Payments are plus first month paper, tax, title, license, and doc fees to qualify. Buyers with approved credit up to 7,500 miles. Offer expires 1/31/2019.
Hello, beautiful. Happy New Year. Happy new hair color. I'm Amy Arrett, founder of Madison Reed, a hair color company I named after my daughter. Women love Madison Reed. You get gorgeous, shiny, multidimensional, healthy-looking hair. You'll look as if you just came from the salon. What makes our color unique is that each shade is composed of multiple tones, just like a colorist would mix a color formula in the salon. Delivered to your door for under $25 with every box of Madison Reed hair color, you get access to licensed colorists so you could color with total confidence. So if looking good, feeling great, saving time and money are on your list of New Year's resolutions, it's go time. Visit madison-reed.com, take our online quiz to find your perfect shade, and get 10% off plus free shipping on your first color kit. Use code Chicago123. That's code Chicago123. Try it. Love it. That's the beauty of Madison Reed.
Your money on WGN. We're just about 20 minutes away from the opening bell on Wall Street, and futures are pointing toward opening gains. Dow futures up 236 points, nearly a percent. On the NASDAQ, up nearly a percent as well. NASDAQ futures up actually more than a percent now, nearly a percent and a third. S&P futures up a percent as well, heading to the opening bell again at 8:30 Chicago time. Now WGN traffic. Here's Mary Vandeveld.
And driving along in the cold weather this morning, the Edens, however, is in good shape. Looks like quite a few people working from home today. It's about 25 minutes only out to the airport. 55 coming in from O'Hare, about 34 from the Edens 24 Express. An hour in the Inbound Ike from 53, 46 from Mannheim, 36 heading out. 55 heading in from the Tri-State, 35 minutes, but very slow heading into Willow Springs. That accident still there in the left lane from 355. It's an hour and 20 minutes. Outbound Ryan at 95th. Accident in the left lane. Inbound 22. From 95th. Bishop Forge is slow from 103rd, not bad on 57. No major delays on any of the tollways. Lakeshore Drive is very slow from Lawrence and down to Belmont and Fox Lake. An accident route 132 and route 59, and also in Hanover Park at County Farm and Army Trail. For personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. Mayor Vandeveld, WGN Traffic Central.
And now a live update on the WGN Chicago Weather Center forecast. Here's meteorologist Tim McGill.
Well, the wind chill advisory continues until noon today. Wind chills this morning have dipped down anywhere to about 20 to 30 below in some of our colder spots. They won't improve a whole lot, but they will get up to around 4 to 14 below later on today, so that's a little bit of improvement. Becoming mostly cloudy today after some morning sun, blustery. We'll see a little bit of light snow, a few flurries develop, looks like towards this evening. Shouldn't amount to much in terms of accumulation, maybe a dusting half inch well south of the city. 21 for the actually, high today, only getting up to around 5 degrees, I should say. Overnight lows tonight are going to get down to around 1 to 10 below, depending on where you're at. We're going to see a little bit of light snow or flurries early this evening and then becoming partly cloudy. For Saturday, a little cloud over after some morning sun. A high tomorrow around 11 degrees. Could see a little bit of light snow towards the evening. Sunday, a little light snow early, then mostly cloudy skies for us. A high Sunday up to 14. A more substantial snow could come during the day on Monday. Could see several inches, as a matter of fact, a high of 30. And an even worse cold coming after that for Tuesday and Wednesday next week. Partly cloudy both days. High temperatures maybe getting up to zero or one above. I'm Tim McGill from
Tim. Yes. My daughter's planning on moving on Wednesday. You know, when you move into a new house, your doors are open a lot.
Yeah.
Is there a worse day in history other than Wednesday to try to do that?
You know, it's funny you should say that. Well, Thursday morning might be colder than Wednesday morning. So if you can put it, you know, might be getting a little bit of a break by doing it Wednesday. But I was looking at some of the forecast temperatures for early Thursday morning, I think it was. And these forecasts now, that a lot could change between now and then. They're going for about 25 to 30 below. I mean, the all-time cold low in Chicago is 27 below. So we're talking about record-breaking temperatures early next week. So
the polar vortex sucks. That's what we're really coming down to.
It really does suck, yeah.
And we could get 6 inches or more on Monday?
Yeah, one model suggesting as little as 3, another one suggesting about 6, and the big one, the European model, suggesting about 8 or 9 inches of snow, maybe up to 10 inches. So
stupid Euro.
Yeah, I hate the Euro.
Good luck with that move, though. If you need me, give me a text.
Yeah, I'll be all over.
All right. Thank you.
It is minus 6 right now officially at O'Hare, minus 4 at Midway. It's minus 3 along the lakefront. In Schaumburg this morning, it's minus 8, and the wind chill is minus 20. I'm Steve Krasanich in the WGN newsroom, and these are the stories that matter on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood, or kiss me, kiss me good.
Dean Richards, live from Los Angeles. Good morning, Dean.
I can relate to all that cold weather that you're talking about. Last night, we were outside here in Hollywood, and
catch
I had to put
a
long sleeve shirt. Long sleeve shirt. I had to put on.
What's the temperature projected to be today? The high today?
75 degrees.
Yeah.
Should we hang up on him now?
I got to tell you, Dean. You and I have known each other for a long time. I wouldn't come back if I were you. I would just stay in Los Angeles. And by the way, I mean until June.
I'm thinking about it. I'm going to see if I can get the station to pay for the hotel for that long.
Yeah. Please let me be on the phone when you call Paul Rennie.
Yeah, the Chateau Marmont.
And just say I'm going to stay at the Chateau Marmont for 6 months. That'd be fantastic.
It's extended stay.
Yeah, but there's a good reason. It's cold outside.
Yeah. First time we've seen it in January in Chicago, no doubt about that. All right, what are you doing in L.A.?
Here to do some interviews, as always. Last night I saw the new Lego movie, Lego 2. Did you see the first Lego movie?
Yeah, I thought the violence was ridiculous.
It was very, very brutal. This movie is very much like that. Very clever, very witty. It's going to be a good one. It comes out.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, honey, or kiss me, kiss me good.
Dean Richards, live from Los Angeles. Good morning, Dean.
I can relate to all that cold weather that you're talking about. Last night, we were outside here in Hollywood, and
I had to
put a long sleeve shirt. Long sleeve shirt. I had to put on.
What's the temperature projected to be today? The high today?
75 degrees.
Yeah.
Should we hang up on him now?
I got to tell you, Dean. You and I have known each other for a long time. I wouldn't come back if I were you. I would just stay in Los Angeles. And by the way, I mean until June.
I'm thinking about it. I'm going to see if I can get the station to pay for the hotel for that long.
Yeah. Please let me be on the phone when you call Paul Rennie.
Yeah, the Chateau Marmont.
And just say I'm going to stay at the Chateau Marmont for 6 months. That'd be fantastic.
It's extended stay.
But there's a good reason. It's cold outside.
Yeah. First time we've seen it in January in Chicago, no doubt about that. All right, what are you doing in L.A.?
Here to do some interviews, as always. Last night I saw the new Lego movie, Lego 2. Did you see the first Lego movie?
Yeah, I thought the violence was ridiculous.
It was very, very brutal. This movie is very much like that. Very clever, very witty. It's going to be a good one. It comes out early part of
But that's
February.
Not a review?
No. I would never review a movie until the actual day of.
Well, who do you interview? Like a Lego guy? Who do you interview for the Lego movie?
Well, the voices in the movie who are Chris Pratt.
Oh.
Who just got engaged to Arnold Schwarzenegger's daughter. Right. There's...
Maybe a fun father-in-law.
Yeah. Elizabeth Banks is one of the voices in the movie. Uh-huh. Tiffany Haddish. Uh-huh. One of the voices in the movie, Will Arnett, among others. For that
a lot of
one.
Funny so, people.
Yeah, so we've got we'll have some good interviews with that today, and then tomorrow I'll interview Taraji P. Henson and Tracy Morgan and Erica Badu and a lot of people in this new movie, What Men Want.
Tracy Morgan just called and said that he made you pregnant.
How did that become his signature joke?
It's his joke.
He loves it.
That's his joke. Everybody he talks to, Oprah's having my baby. I made Oprah pregnant.
Someone's about to become pregnant.
Someone's going to be pregnant. What Men Want, I feel like that title's been used before.
Well, it was What Women Want.
The
Mel Gibson movie where Mel Gibson could hear the thoughts of people around him. You know what? I never really even thought about that until now. You may remember that I had a small skirmish with Mel Gibson.
I'd heard that.
Many years ago. Maybe he could hear what I was thinking. And that's what set off the said skirmish. I never even thought of that.
Or maybe the other possibility, maybe he's just an a-hole. I mean, I'm just saying. I'm just throwing it out there.
Never know. There's, a-hole was used in that whole conversation.
Yep, so it sure was.
Very possible.
Sure was. All right, so any other Hollywood news you need to report this morning?
There's really nothing that much going on this morning. But there's a terrible new movie that's opening today that's from two Oscar winners, Matthew McConaughey and Anne Hathaway, who normally I like pretty much in most of the movies they do. But this new movie that they do is called Serenity, and it's pretty awful. It's it tries to be one of these stylish film noir-styled movies, you know, very period piece and very stylish. Story about a fishing boat captain, kind of down on his luck, fishing boat captain on this sleepy maritime island. His ex-wife shows up one day and says that she will give him $10 million in cash if he will take her current husband, who is extremely abusive in just about every way possible, take him out on the fishing boat, get him all liquored up, and then if he should happen to fall overboard and the sharks eat him, so be it. That's sort of the initial premise of this movie, which would have been a nice premise. You know, is he going to do it? Is he not going to do it? But about halfway through the movie, it takes this esoteric, artsy turn into so many probable things that could happen, and it winds up being one of these movies where it doesn't really give you the ending. You have to figure out what you think the ending is, whether it is or not.
I just really want to go see it.
Yeah, fun.
Does Anne Hathaway break out in song or anything?
I agree. Yeah,
no, there are definitely no songs in this movie.
Thank goodness.
A lot of shadows, a lot of mumbling, and a lot of shadows, you know, where they're thinking, and then you're supposed to figure out what they're thinking.
Kind of like the McConaughey commercials, right?
Where he you know what? There's actually one scene where he's driving a truck.
Oh, no.
And he started talking and thinking to himself, and I started laughing out loud because it's exactly like those Matthew McConaughey. Was it Lincoln Mercury?
Yeah,
Lincoln.
Did he say anything about playing pool and for no reason going outside and driving down the road and running into a bull? Does he say anything about that?
The movie makes as much sense as that.
Yeah.
The ending of this movie, and you know the movie ends. It gives you a twist at the end. For me to describe anything more would spoil it. So for the few unfortunate few of you who are going to go see this movie, I don't want to spoil it for you. But it gives you this twist at the end, and then the credits come up, and you're scratching your head, going, "What the hell just happened here?" I'm not 100% sure what this movie happened, so I wound up giving it a C minus. It is stylish. It's a nice looking movie, but in terms of any story, this is a time of year. January is the dumping ground for the movie studios where they dump their worst movies, and certainly we have seen that so far for all the new movies that have come out for the last couple of weeks. There is a family movie that's coming out today, which I wasn't able to see, called The Kid Who Would Be King, which is sort of a modern take, a group of modern nerdy kids kind of playing out the King Arthur and the Round Table story. And from the clips that I've seen, it looks like kind of a nice movie. I'm actually going to go try to catch it today and see what it's all about. But, if you're looking for a family movie, it's rated PG. Looks like one that would be nice for the whole family.
We don't have time to get into this now, but Page Six this morning is reporting that Gordon Ramsay dropped the F-bomb 128 times in one 30-minute interview.
with
it's like interviewing Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, there you go. The interview show is called The Hot Ones. It's an interview show where celebrity guests try to answer questions while they eat spicy chicken wings. Do you think maybe we have too much to choose from now? Because I do.
No way, I want that.
I do.
There's too much.
Make that prime time.
Enjoy your weekend in L.A. When are you back on the show from here?
I will be back.
If you come back.
Yeah, if I do come back, I will be back on Sunday morning for the regular radio show.
Okay, all right.
And among my guests on Sunday will be the lovely, delightful Bonnie Hunt.
Great. Ah, Bonnie. We love Bonnie. What's not to love? All right, buddy. Thank you.
Have a good weekend, everybody. See
That's
you.
A moron. Dean, moron entertainment right there. All right. Pat Brady is not just a political guru. He is a former prosecuting federal attorney. He has his lawyer suit on this morning to answer some questions about the big Trump news. Roger Stone, his longtime pal, arrested, indicted later this morning in a Fort Lauderdale courtroom. More on that from Pat coming up.
Look, I know that the charges are about whether or not he gave false statements, and that's on that individual. That has nothing to do with the president. Those are the charges that they have brought against this individual. When you want to get into specific questions, you'll have to talk to the president's outside counsel on that.
Sarah Huckabee, oh my God, why did I ever take this job, Sanders? On CNN this morning about the indictment of Roger Stone. Pat Brady rejoins us now. Pat was a federal prosecutor. He's indicted a bunch of bad guys. How often and how many times can you go to the well it wasn't me, it was them, when everybody that's them is so closely associated with you?
It doesn't work. Just ask Ken Lay at Enron or any CEO that's been indicted for any kind of fraud. It doesn't work. I watched that Sarah Sanders interview real quickly. In May, the DNC announced he'd been hacked by the Russians. In July, WikiLeaks releases the stolen documents. So the world knows the documents been stolen by the Russians and released by WikiLeaks. Paragraph 12 of this indictment, you got to read it. After the July release, a senior Trump campaign official was directed to contact Stone about additional releases by WikiLeaks. Who could that senior campaign or that person have been and was directed? Was it Trump? Was it Manafort? Who was it? And she was specifically asked that question in the interview. Was it the president that directed people in his office to contact Stone? And she dodged the answer.
In general, when the president stood up and said, Russia, if you're listening, I hope you can find the 30,000 emails. The timeline of that was directly related to the WikiLeaks thing. And then in campaign appearances over and over again, he's talked about how he loves WikiLeaks. All that is video that's available with a couple of clicks.
That statement was July 27th.
It all lines up, right?
Yeah. You always timeline these things, and I just try to do it there. If you timeline it, like, oh, that makes sense. He made that speech. Now, CNN's reporting, so take it for what it's worth, that he made 137 Twitter mentions of WikiLeaks during the course of the campaign.
Hey, Pat, how much of this is new? It was not a surprise that Roger Stone was going to get indicted, but when you read the indictment, how much of it is stunning, breaking news, developing new stuff that we didn't know?
Paragraph, what I just read.
That's it.
Because it opens up the question, the passive language of was directed by a senior campaign official. There weren't that many of them in July 2016. Manafort, the president, Bannon wasn't even there then, if I had my timeline correct. So who directed? And we got the president 5 days later making that statement, the circle there, the circumstantial evidence, but you can convict people of crimes with circumstantial evidence all day long. And it's just that's the new part, I think. And I think the president's story today is going to be it's all about things that don't relate to him. That'll be his line. But the Sarah Sanders answering the question about what was directed was at the president when her answer was, I'm not a lawyer.
So she can hide all day long, and that is what it is. How long can Mitch McConnell, as the leader of the Republicans, continue to hide when Republican moderates around the country, at the least, and certainly part of his base, with all current poll numbers, show that they're losing ground every day?
No, getting killed right now. He's at 35%. The shutdown's killing him. This is, and I agree kind of somewhat, Justin, with the sentiment of your question. Is any of this new? Not really. just that one portion. But at 35% approval, at some point, somebody's got to jump ship. And there are people that are actually asking some legitimate questions. But McConnell's been missing in action since the beginning because he's up for election in 2 years.
But having said that, can he hide for that long with all of this coming down? I mean, I've long since given up hope that he'll do the right thing and be the leader he was elected to be and be the patriot he purports himself to be. He's not. He's a coward and a narcissist and a criminal. There's a New York Times Magazine piece on him this week, which is nothing short of embarrassing, about the rules he's changed in the Senate and him taking credit for things that have really changed the course of this country and not in positive ways. But do we have any faith in leadership in Congress now? Is there anybody I can look to?
I think there are some people on the Senate, the Intelligence Committee, that are actually Burr and some others, Senator Burr, that are trying to do the right thing. Senator Warner's a Democrat. I think there are, but I think if you look to McConnell for that kind of leadership, you're never going to find it. It was interesting what Chuck Todd said yesterday. He likens himself to LBJ and Everett Dirksen. And that's not going to be the case for he or Harry Reid, historically.
So Michael Cohen and Paul Manafort, his attorney, this is not an arguable point, or points, his personal attorney for the past 10 years and the guy that ran his campaign are already up the river. And now Roger Stone, who's been his associate, his follow-up
campaign advisor
to Cohen from the 50s and 60s and was Trump's mentor right through the 80s. And now Roger Stone is going away as well. I mean, the only people closer to him at this point,
his family.
Yeah, Trump Jr. and Ivanka.
Yeah, it could be one of those people that directed to find out more, which would be consistent with Jr. The thing is, hey, I'm sorry to say this, I read this indictment and in context, this is the biggest clown show I've ever seen. And when you read what Roger Stone did trying to intimidate one of the intermediaries, so the level of stupidity is unbelievable. They're dealing with the United States Department of Justice, and they're lying to Congress. It's really mind boggling.
Somebody just made a good point too that first ago maybe Kushner, and I didn't mention him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be any of those, but that's a pretty, you can narrow it down to six or seven people.
Yeah, you're right.
Wasn't me. Wasn't me. I'm the leader of the free world, but I'm too stupid to realize everyone around me is a criminal. That's another great day to be Donald Trump.
Well, I mean, you're from New York. When you deal with New Yorkers, they're real educated. They're smart people, mm-hmm. and they're sophisticated people. You read this stuff, you go, what a mess these people are and this campaign was. I mean, it's continued as president, but it's really just odd.
Well, the bottom line is everything that we have said about Trump from 2015 and on is proving to be true, and it's being proven by him and the people around him. So,
yeah, bad, for the, bad for the country. This is bad for the country.
No, it's horrible.
Bad for the country. But we're not going to see the right thing, I don't think, from leadership for a while.
Will we hear from Trump today by Twitter or any other way?
He's gone silent so far. I haven't seen anything. But I think we've seen the storyline from Sarah Sanders, and probably midday we'll hear no collusion. But every step closer. Again, this is nothing new on him except that paragraph, but it's pretty bad, and now it all makes sense. But remember, there are two buckets, too. There's the Russian collusion related to the Trump enterprises, and then there's the collusion rate related to the Hillary email. So there's a lot of components here, and that's how you build a conspiracy case.
Thank you, Pat Brady. Appreciate it.
See you guys.
Thanks, Pat.
Headlines coming up in just a second, and Lori Lightfoot will be joining us as well. We going straight to the headlines, yeah? Let's. Are you introducing us? What are we doing here?
I got the.
We got a quick break. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with the headlines next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
It's 8:44. We continue with show number 1,301 at Cochran Show on Twitter, Steve Cochran Show, Facebook, Instagram, and the like. And Justin did a nice job of coercing every mayoral candidate to come in. Who's your victim today?
I have to say, this is there's a lot of courage to come in the negative degree weather for Lori Lightfoot, because I feel like some of the other candidates, they get a 30 degree day, maybe 35.
Yeah, you should get bonus votes just for showing up on a day like
Lori Lightfoot.
I'll take it.
A mayoral candidate, former chair of the Police Accountability Task Force here in Chicago. Thank you so much for being our guest. We appreciate it.
My pleasure to be here.
First swing, Justin.
We'll start right at the top. You have had a extended campaign. You were in the race long before a lot of the candidates that are campaigning now. Same reasons that you got into this mayoral race to count today than when you did back in the summer?
I think in some ways even more so. We got into this race talking about the need to get rid of the us versus them style of governance and to really be give voice to people whose opinions and lives, frankly, were being ignored but deserve to have a seat at the table. That's no different from May when I got in to now. It's all critically important. And frankly, I think that the events of the last couple weeks and even just this last 24 hours show that there's so much corruption in the way that our government functions. And there is a true cost to that. You know, the average person may think, well, who the heck cares if Danny Solis wired up? But what that says is you, in order to actually get what you're entitled to as a taxpayer, you got to give more to get.
Now, you have been very upfront about the Burke case, where a lot of others have not been. Having said that, I want to take you to a next level on this, because I'd love your reaction on this, because this affects you as mayor.
Mm-hmm.
I've said this before. A mayor has to be strong enough to control the circus that is the aldermen and alderwomen of Chicago. I was outraged, as we all were, to hear three or four aldermen step up and go, hey, we're family. We don't talk about stuff like this. We're family. Are you kidding?
Yeah. The fact that, I mean, we can take this in so many directions, right? But the fact that members of the city council are content to have the U.S. Attorney's Office and the FBI be essentially their ethical North Star, rather than saying, this is a problem. We have to get in front of this. We have to restore confidence in the average person, that we actually get it, instead of saying, well, this is, of silence. And
it's unbelievable.
I mean, it's just absolutely outrageous.
They talk about the shootings on the far west side, and they go, we can't have a no-snitch policy. They talk about the police department's corruption, and they're protecting each other. It's ridiculous.
They are reinforcing the fact that they think it's more important to be this little insular club that is complicit in all sorts of corruption than rather to have somebody step up for whatever reason, right? Danny Solis obviously didn't step up and make recordings out of the goodness of his heart. But the truth is, none of this would be relevant if they were actually conducting a government that was up and above board. And it underscores city council needs all kinds of changes. And I hope, frankly, that a lot of new people are going to be coming in. We put forth what we call the People's Pledge. And it's this basic acceptance that government has to be open, it has to be transparent and accountable. And a lot of challengers have joined us with that. We're up to 25, and we have to move forward in a different direction.
Amen.
Three of the big issues in this campaign, of course, are public safety. Mm-hmm. You've got education, of course, always there, and equity. I think that we talk about finance and what we're doing with the pensions, but also the way that Chicago, how everything needs to be equitable. Let's talk with public safety, because your job at the chair as a police accountability force, you talked a lot about transparency.
Mm-hmm.
The consent decree was a big part of, and you've spoken on this. Where are we? I mean, there's a lot of mayoral candidates that are kind of waffling back and forth about what they would do with a consent decree, and I guess you're even seeing with Gary McCarthy, who can't even get on the, whether or not the crime was committed with the the Jason Van Dyke, Laquan McDonald. For you to have had this role with the accountability task force and to be where you're at, where are you with the consent decree and with the reforming of the Chicago Police Department?
Well, these folks are waffling because they don't have a moral compass on these issues. I'm a former federal prosecutor. I investigated police misconduct in the police department. I led the police accountability task force. And more recently, I've been president of the Chicago Police Board. You have to have that depth of experience to be able to move things forward. Look, I expected the consent decree to be signed, sealed, and delivered by now. I know that the federal judge who has it was waiting for the FOP's challenge to be resolved by the Seventh Circuit. That happened about 2 weeks ago. So I'm hopeful that the court is going to bring the parties together, ask the last set of questions, get the consent decree entered. Look, I've been very vocal about the fact that I think the consent decree has some changes that need to be made. There's things that they left off the table. And there's things that they allow that I think are problematic. Shouldn't be able to shoot in crowds. Shouldn't be able to use chokeholds. But I hope that we will get this thing resolved and moving. I've been very clear that the work that I've been doing over these last 3 years is now being manifest and memorialized in part in the consent decree. But in order to get our police department back on its feet and making sure that they've got the resources that they need to be successful, that they can really effectively do their core mission, which is to fight crime and protect the most vulnerable citizens, there's more, much more needs to be done. Look, 23,000 people have been shot in this city since Rahm Emanuel took his oath of office back in 2011. Part of the reason for that is because we had a mayor who didn't know local policing and had to learn on the job with disastrous results. I am the only candidate in this race that has the reform and accountability background and comes from law enforcement. That's it. We can't afford to make the same mistake twice by hiring somebody who is waffling, trying to figure out what the answers are, looking at other people's website, and making it up as they go along. Well, this is too critical an issue.
And I think your points are all important and valid, but how can you be the mayor without at least having the confidence at the police department that you have their back, you're not looking to take them down? And I think people need to hear that from you.
Well, I do have their back. If you look at the work that we did on the task force,
right,
a lot of it was focused on how do we make sure that the line officers are best situated to do their job. We talked a lot about training.
Right.
We talked a lot about improving the quality of supervision. We talked a lot about making sure that they've got access to the best technology. And, of course, rebuilding the relationship with the community. So all of those overarching issues, which is what I've been about for the last few years, and frankly, the truth is people that know me, the officers who know me, that are friends of mine, they know who I am, which is I think the police department is one of the most important institutions in our city, not just in city government, but in our city.
Right.
It's critically important that they are successful, that they can do their job effectively. And what I'm suggesting is there's ways in which we can do that. Of course, we have to hold bad officers accountable.
No doubt.
They're costing us tens of millions of dollars
every
year.
The settlements have been insane.
Insanity. But we can't throw out the baby with the bathwater. And I always say the vast majority of officers come on the job for the right reason. They stay on the job for the right reason. They just want to know what the rules are. And they want supervisory support to help them do their job.
I want to come back and talk about some positives going on in the city, too, and the ways you can continue to extend those.
Mm-hmm.
Because the nature of a campaign like this, especially with so many candidates, is just a hammer on the problems.
Yep.
But there's a lot of good things going on in Chicago. So let's talk about how you keep those going, too.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Lori Lightfoot's here. She wants to be mayor. Justin?
Let's talk about some of the other issues. We talked about the three. There's public safety. We just talked about education and equity. Well, let's talk about equity. The next mayor is going to have a fiscal cliff on their hands. 2020 is projected. The pension payout is extreme. And there's already talk about raising revenue, or a lot of candidates in talking about cutting waste. How do you see this playing out? Because a lot of Chicagoans are feeling the mm-hmm. burden of property taxes, mm-hmm. and but they also recognize they live in an area that there's going to be this fiscal cliff. It's been highly publicized. Yeah. So what are your plans for finances and getting that situation taken care of, which would be in the next term?
Well, you started your question where I believe we have to begin, which is about equity. We know that the current tax burden from fees, fines, levies has been unfair. It's fallen most heavily on the people who are least able to bear it, which is lower middle class and working class families. I'm a kid who came from a working class family. My dad worked two and three jobs my entire growing up years. My mother worked a series of low wage jobs. So I understand that burden. And there are a lot of people that are suffering. Look, the reality is we're going to have a conversation about revenue. But what I've said is you've got to earn the right to talk to taxpayers about revenue. And we are nowhere near that yet. When we look at the amount of money that's being wasted in litigation cost, not just in the police department, although that's a huge driver of it, we're spending literally about $70 million plus a year, almost $100 million in litigation costs against the city. The police department alone is $50 to $60 million. And there doesn't seem to be any sense of urgency around that problem.
Well, when you're this upside down on money, you can't be wasting dollars.
No, absolutely.
And by the way, not that people don't deserve settlements in that case, but you don't get yourself in the position where you have to pay millions of dollars. That's the big fix. Now, any major city, you see cranes above the city skyline, it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Means there's development. There's things going on. The Riverwalk's beautiful. Seen a lot of building, a lot of development. I'm sure you're the same way. I get incredibly frustrated at the national reputation of this city being an old west shoot 'em out city. It's not dangerous. Chicago's this. Chicago's that. We know the truth about the city.
Yeah.
With all the problems that go with this and the new mayor who's going to have to take on, there's a lot of good things. So tell me about something good going on in the city that you're going to continue.
Well, look, I think that the economic development in a downtown area is absolutely a good thing. People are coming here from literally all over the world because we have a beautiful downtown area, a lot of interesting things for tourists to see. We care a lot about our history, so our museums are beautiful of all sorts of sizes. Those are the kind of things that we need to continue. But if we got to get a handle on the violence so that our reputation that's creeping out there as a city that's not safe continues to diminish. But you're right. There's a lot of good things. There's a lot of neighborhood organizations that are doing really great things. You know, one of the things that one of them I'll give a plug to is My Block, My Hood, My City.
Okay.
Jim All Cole does a fantastic job.
Times, yeah.
He's a great guy. That network is really expanding. And the basic premise of it is take kids who are in sheltered neighborhoods who don't understand or know about the greatness of the city and get them exposed to all sorts of things, all kinds of areas, different kinds of food, to really expand their horizons. That is a great thing. Another great thing, and I'm a big, long supporter of the Crystal Ray Network, right, which is we take kids from difficult neighborhoods, we give them a college prep education, and we expose them to jobs downtown so that they build a resume, they see themselves in these nice, tall, gleaming buildings, and we demystify the economics of Chicago for kids that are coming from.
Well, and the city colleges program too, right? They make sure the city colleges are viable, and that we're funneling kids in there and allowing them to get to school and get the education they deserve.
Right. So I'm very focused on things that are happening at the neighborhood level that do a good job, really channeling kids and showing them that there's this larger world horizon. I would have been one of those kids. So I love these programs because I think they're so important to building, frankly, the next generation of residents and voters, frankly, in our city.
Well, we'll have to have you back, but last word for this time around, Justin.
Yeah, you're running an anti-Rahm Emanuel campaign, and it's something that even early May, before you even knew that the mayor was not running for re-election. Now that he's not running for re-election, do you feel like you're better suited to win this election because he's not there, or does it actually hinder the fact that everyone's looking forward and everyone is sort of forgetting the past?
Well, I think the events of the last month with the Burke search warrant and the Burke charges, now Solis, really has shown, frankly, that the old machine is crumbling. What I hear from people is they're looking for a leader who has integrity, who's independent, who talks about the issues that are critically important, not only to uplift the quality of life in our neighborhood, but to restore confidence in our government, because we have so many people in this race who are running for cover, who are not willing to talk about the issues, or frankly, worse, who aren't telling the truth about their own engagement and attachment and complicity in the machine that costs people real money. So I think this is now the framing issue of this race in the last month. And I hear from people all over the city, keep fighting hard, because this is what they want. They want a leader who's going to be independent and reform the way that our government engages with citizens and, frankly, engages with businesses.
I noticed off the air you were talking to Dave about the Bears. Did you get the answers you needed from Dave?
Well, I was worried about Mitch Trubisky and, frankly, some of our other defensive players playing in the Pro Bowl. I know it's more like powder puff than it is about real football. But still, he's the franchise. We got to
imagine if Trubisky got hurt in the Pro Bowl.
Oh, be horrible!
I tried to be as reassuring as I could be that won't happen.
I was watching them play dodgeball last night.
You know what? That's more violent than the game will
hilarious.
Be. Fortunately, Lori Lightfoot, website for the campaign.
It's lightfootforchicago.com. Check us out.
Everything you're standing on is there, and it's constantly updated.
Everything is there. All of our policy prescriptions, actual substance. Imagine it's all on the website.
If I had a mayoral website, I'd have solitaire up there and different links and things you could play.
A little construction guy.
A lot of distractions. Nice to
progress.
See you. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Coming over, especially on a day like today.
The most beautiful thing in the world. The most beautiful thing in the world. Johnny, it's beautiful. Beautiful thing in the world.
Well, sometimes you break down those walls in the world. in funny ways. Maybe you're the heir to a shoe factory and you run into a drag queen. Suddenly you're best friends and you actually start making Kinky Boots. Kinky Boots, the musical, for a quick run, but it's a long, luxurious stay compared to what our next two guests are going to be going through with one-nighters all over the country. As I am happy to say, Karis Gallant. You just told me the pronunciation.
Yeah, that's right.
Karis Gallant.
Karis Gallant.
You got it.
You know what? I get up early. Karis Gallant and Ashley North are here. Lauren and Nicola from Kinky Boots. Thanks for getting up.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
This is a Cyndi Lauper, Harvey Fierstein musical that Dave, did you do two or three nights of this?
I did not, but I have seen it.
Yeah, oh, it's great.
Yeah, I can see the.
I thought he was in the chorus line.
No.
Yeah. It's great. So give me a little background. Where were you before this show, and how did you get it? Start with you, Karis. What were you doing just previous?
Like before.
Just before you got Kinky Boots.
Oh, okay. So before Kinky Boots, I was pretty much living in New York City, just doing the pound the pavement actor lifestyle. Auditioning for everything and waitressing and hoping that all these things would come into my life and fall into my lap, and they did, and I'm very excited.
So when you audition for a million things, how do you know this one went really well, or is it just one of those things where you don't know and you get the call?
Sometimes you don't know and you get the call, but with this it was more like I had been in more than once, so it was
callbacks
coming in and knowing that it was possibly going to happen, but just waiting for the moment it did. And
very cool.
Same with Ashley. It was like you kept going in and hoping for the best, and then you get the call. And
same story, Ashley?
Ready.
Yeah, pretty much. I was in for, I think, 7 or 8 months, and so I'd gone in many times for this one. But I remember a lot of us shared the same experience. Our director said to us, "And that's all you need to do," at the end of our audition. And for a lot of us, it was like, are you trying to tell me something?
Well, that's different than thanks for coming in, because thanks for coming in usually means not
heard
so good.
That's not the best way.
Yeah, not so good usually. So did you see it and sing it to prepare for it, or do you go in just with the sides and get ready to rock?
You definitely have to do a lot of preparation. At least for me, like, I know I wanted to be in there without having to even read it. I wanted to just feel so comfortable. But in some cases, like with short-term like stuff and without a lot of notice, you have to sometimes just be on your feet and look at the paper on the spot. But for us, like, we had a couple times where we could like remember how the last time went and like apply what they had given us in the room as far as notes go, and then do it for next time and be like, do you like it now?
It's a lot of work to get the job, and then you do the 22nd through the 27th here. By the way, BroadwayInChicago.com. Get your tickets now, because it's going to be gone here and gone quickly. And then they go on 14 one-nighters.
Unbelievable.
Around the country.
I can't even fathom that. You know, when you're in musical theater, there are advancements and advancements. Each time a new musical comes out, they try something new. They push the envelope. Kinky Boots is a newer musical, as you mentioned, Cyndi Lauper, Harvey Fierstein. Can you tell the difference as actors? Like, when you come into a show like Kinky Boots, and you're like, I see what they're trying to do with this show that was different than maybe what I did in a musical a year ago or 2 years ago.
Absolutely. I think it's so apparent. And with our show, they're kind of hitting you on the head by the end of the show with a message and what we're trying to share and what we're trying to say in terms of, you know, acceptance. I mean, we literally spell it out in the finale. We have the 6 steps of happiness, and it's like, here it is. Here's what we're trying to tell you. You know, accepting others, and you change the world when you change your mind and accept other people. So
it's a great message in the show. Now, I know Cyndi Lauper for years, and she's a really sweet person and really nice, but I'm guessing it's different when you work for her. So do you guys cross paths in this cast, or the show's moving so quickly she just calls and says, don't screw up the songs?
Probably more of the second thing.
We
put the show up so quickly, and the show's also been done multiple times now, you know, since it's been opened on Broadway. So there have been many casts who've put on our clothes and done the show. So I think the longer we go away from Broadway, the more removed the creators might become, just as the show becomes going into, you know, new hands and stuff. And now that it will be closing on Broadway soon, it's going to start, you know, we're touring it, so it's going to go to even more cities, and then it'll go regional. So you'll see it in places for a little bit long term, sit down in random cities.
When
so,
we'll talk with stand-up comedians and others about playing to the room, And they'll talk about, you know, being on tour and being in a different comedy club. And each day, when you're doing these kind of shows where you've got a week engagement here in Chicago, but you're doing 14 one-night stops, I mean, do you have to get, as an actor, do you have to get used to the room? Do you have to, are there different ways that that the room works for you as a singer and an actor?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think a really big thing is actually the temperature of the stage.
Yeah.
And depending on your costume.
Is that right?
It is, yeah. Yeah, so I wear a lot of layers at the top of the show, so everyone's kind of like jealous of me if the stage is cold.
But then you're singing and dancing as it warms up. The stage warms up then as well?
Yeah. Yeah, but it, I mean, we have things like, you know, different sizes of the stages and
like every theater we go different to
depths.
Different.
Yeah. Mm. Or the sound, like when we hear ourselves, sometimes we can't hear ourselves as well. And so there's definitely a ton of adjusting to
what a way to make a national tour debut. You guys are never going to forget this.
No, no, never. As soon as I saw the show and like read this script and listened to this music, I was like, this is such a special thing I'm going to be able
it's
to
very
do.
Cool.
I'm like never going to forget it.
It's the last weekend. It's the first and last weekend for Chicago. I don't know where you're going next, but you can still get tickets. Not a lot, but tickets tonight, tomorrow, and I think Sunday, right? And yeah, then you guys are getting out of town just in time because Wednesday's high is zero.
High is less than that.
What a time to be alive.
-4 or something like that, yeah.
So, you know, I always like to bring up the fact that all over Chicago, especially in this hour on a school day, there's moms and dads and grandpas and grandmas who have little girls who want to grow up and be Broadway stars. So what's the story for each of you? How old were you when you started, and when did you realize this is what you wanted to do with your life?
Oh, wow. I think I've always been singing, like, since I was a kid, like, the kind of annoying singing where your mom, like, really wants you to stop.
Walk
like,
into the party and go, or, like, who wants to hear
sing,
me sing?
Stop singing because your little brother's just, like, got down for a nap and your mom just stopped even crying and she keeps singing. That was probably me. But, yeah, since then, I gave sports a try.
But this is really all you ever wanted to do.
This is literally all I ever wanted to
How about
do.
You, Ashley?
Yeah, my first show, I played Snow White in Snow White. And as a little girl, I mean...
Sure. How Home
you,
run.
How do you come back from that?
You don't.
Right, right. That was a Christmas tree in the kindergarten play. Aww. You know, there's no future in that. Aww. What are you going to play? Just forests? I mean, come on.
I always
you start getting typecast as saplings? That's no good.
No,
I always amazing respect for the work that you do, not only for being able to be on a national tour, which is crazy because of just the stress it puts on your vocal cords, your bodies, and to be able to do that, but the psychological part of being an actor, especially in this world, you have to at a certain point learn that every audition is not going to go your way, mm-hmm. and that rejection is a big part of this world. And I don't think a lot of people think about that. Even some of the biggest names on Broadway who are winning Tonys and are on television, they're having the same issues where they're rejected 9 times out of 10. Yeah. It's something you have to come to terms with if you want to be in this profession.
100%, yeah. I'd say closer to 99 out of 100 times.
Yeah, literally.
Like, literally, yeah.
Yeah, it's something that has to encourage you, not discourage you. Like, mm-hmm. you have to want that next time to hopefully be a yes and not get so down on yourself about those.
Do you have to learn that? Is that something when you go into the business, you're like, I have the mental fortitude?
Curve. I think it is a learning curve, yeah. I think you might start off on the lower end and not understand it or, like, turn inside yourself and be like, what am I doing so wrong? But you also have to realize it, like... What are you doing right? And what spots can you fit into, but maybe right now you don't? Or, like, maybe your turn is next. You just have to wait. It's about just keeping patience and keeping your spirits up. It's so easy to get down and give up. But for us, it's like, that's not an option. We just have to keep going.
Well, you don't get to have a bad day at work. I mean, something, you know, you get a cranky phone call in the afternoon from whomever in your life. Get out there, smile, sing, and dance.
Yeah.
Because that's what the audience came to see, right?
Exactly.
Yep. It's true.
Show goes on. We have to... Keep our spirits up always.
BroadwayInChicago.com through the weekend. And then do you know what your first city is after Chicago?
I think we're in Iowa.
Iowa or Indiana. I think we go to Evansville.
It's much warmer there, isn't it, Steve?
Go south. I'm telling you, man. Go south as fast as you can.
Iowa, Indiana.
Alaska is 42 Evansville. Degrees today. So
Evansville.
Indiana. Yeah, we'll be there. But that's just one night. So then we'll do another one night.
Well, no matter where you're listening in the country, they'll be coming to your house soon.
We can't wait.
And Harvey Fierstein and Cyndi Lauper did it. It's a smash hit, as you know, and it's in Chicago through the weekend and then on the road again. Follow you guys on social media everywhere at Karis Gallant, KarisGallant, and at Ashley Marie North. Nice to see both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for getting up. Seriously, it's a ridiculous time to be awake.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for the world of coffee.
There you go. There you go.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Ed and DJ coming in. That'll be good to see those guys.
Yeah!
So that farmer yesterday, nice California boy, he is so thrilled about this weather. He couldn't be happier to be here.
I just saw them. He said, 1 degree. Why even bother with 1 degree? Is it a minus or a plus?
We only have one. We have to share.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I butt in with a bad accident?
Oh, sure. Of course.
Yeah. Outbound side of the Kennedy. It's a rollover accident at Adams. All lanes are blocked right now.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
FAA. Here you go with the ground with the grounding to a halt of the federal government. There is a ground stop at LaGuardia and delays at Newark and Philly due to air traffic controller shortages because of the continued shutdown of the government. It's going to get worse, kids.
Well, that's going to be. I really truly think if you're going to put some pressure on politicians, the air traffic controller situation, or even an outright strike of having to come to work and not get paid.
Well, there's talk
that'll
of a general
shut it down
strike
right away.
Yeah,
and there's now a statement, guys, from the FAA on this. An FAA spokesperson says they've halted flights into LaGuardia because they've experienced a slight increase in sick leave at two facilities. The FAA says they've mitigated the impact by augmenting staffing, rerouting traffic, and increasing spacing between aircraft in the New York area and along the Northeast Corridor.
So is it like a blue flu kind of thing?
I think it's just people who decided they're not going to come to work because they need to go get paid somewhere else.
You know what the scariest thing I heard in the last couple of days was? And it was an air traffic controller at and a supervisor at a major airport. Said the equipment's not being serviced. He said we have had radar go down. We moved to other radar. Okay. Said and if that radar goes down, he said at any given time you can have a mechanical failure where all the radar could go. You know, we've seen it here in Chicago. Yeah. We've had sites here in Chicago where all the radar is gone. And normally you've got people on staff ready to rock. They're not servicing the equipment at the
airports. You know, when this partial shutdown is over, and I hope that to be sooner than later, I hope that there is a look to see what is essential staff when it comes to these things, if it ever happens again in the future, because I believe TSA and the FAA and the air traffic controllers, they should be essential staff. They should be paid for the work.
And the thing is, it cannot be a negotiating ploy. Yeah. You know, there's talk. Yeah. Chuck Todd talked about it yesterday, that there's always a bill, no more shutdowns. They've got to push it. And by they, it means the rest of us. So the same way you showed up to vote for the midterm, you got to make this a tenet, something that you're going to stick to in regards to who you pick in 2020. If you don't insist on no more shutdowns, then don't vote for that candidate. Because the fact that they can use that as leverage, it's ridiculous.
Next week we'll talk more about it if it continues. But man, listening to a little bit to I think it was Laura Trump, one of his daughters.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you know, John.
Oh, it's a little pain now.
But the beyond that, and I thought it was very interesting that there really is a concern, or at least a thought, that this is for the future of our country. Border security is a national emergency, and there may be a little pain in the short term, but this is to benefit Americans in American history in the long term. And there's something that, you know, that resonates with a lot of people with that. So is it? I don't know. We'll find out about national emergencies and things like that. But an interesting argument from Laura Trump that was on whatever stage.
I just go back to what I've said forever with all of the phones in all of the world and all of the cameras on all of the phones. If the border was being overrun, wouldn't you see video all day long?
All day long, yeah.
Hey, guys, there's something else I wanted to draw your attention to, if you got a second.
Is it National Tater Tot Day next Wednesday?
No, it's not. No. You were talking earlier about the need for the armed FBI arrest of Roger Stone.
Yep.
We've now seen some stuff that was under seal by the special counsel, including the warrants that were issued for Roger Stone. And it specifically says there that there was a risk that the defendant would flee and destroy or tamper with evidence.
You there you go.
So that's specifically
that's the explainer.
Why.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
White Sox, White Sox, go, go, White Sox, let's go, 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 White Sox.
Well, Dave Emmett, here we are, Sox Fest.
How about that?
Yes. And you know, a perfect weekend for baseball. Let's get out there right now, throw it around a little bit. What do you say?
I think that's a great idea.
Can you imagine?
Right on the river. We can stand right on the river.
If you foul one off in this weather, it'd be like Daffy Duck or Sylvester. You just crumble into little cartoon pieces. Ed and DJ are here. The boys are about to start their 50th year together.
Seems like it was yesterday.
It just seems like we just got together yesterday.
How many years? Seriously, how many years?
This will be...
Five?
No. This will be 11.
11 years?
Yes.
It starts already.
Thanks for Karen.
11 years and never a fight between the two of them. Never a disagreement.
Not real ones, that's for sure.
We don't have a lot of disagreements, though.
You guys, the pretend ones.
You guys have better chemistry than two people who met on Tinder and it turned into a relationship. So, that's a good thing.
Later, a relationship, sure.
So, Dave, you start.
Well, I first of all, you look at the roster of guys who are going to be here for Sox Fest. I mean, this is pretty cool because you have these generations blended. You have Ozzie coming back. You've got these Hall of Famers, including a new Hall of Famer in Harold Baines. But you've also got these prospects everybody is so anxious about. Darren, who are you most excited to see this weekend? Aside from Ed.
Yeah, other than Ed.
Well, other than Ed, honestly, I'm not necessarily excited about seeing anybody in particular other than the guys that I haven't seen since the season ended, my friends with the big league club. But last night, standing around some of these young players, again, being blown away at the massive size of somebody like Luis Robert. He's like 6'5". You stand next to him, and they might have him listed at like 6'2". I'm telling you, I'm looking up at him going, what the heck? This is a center fielder? And there's so many guys like that. Jimenez and Mike Rodolfo. I mean, you're going, this guy's massive.
Yeah, big guys never used to run.
That's right.
These guys are all 4'4", 40 guys now. They're crazy.
Well, stop it. Now you're making me feel slow. I go back in time and go, I was considered pretty fast at 4'5", and you're right. These guys are massive, and I look like I was standing still running next to them in my prime. So that's how far the athletes have come. And for me, it's more along the lines, I can't wait to get spring training and just see these guys compete against big league pitching. You already know defensively the things that they're capable of doing quickly. But see how they swing the bats. I'm excited about that.
As a Sox fan, it's Christmas come early. Looking at even the non-roster invites, a lot of the names that we saw from trades that we saw some of our fan-friendly players get traded elsewhere for prospects, they're coming to spring training. Doesn't mean they're going to make the big league roster, but it's exciting to see names like Luis Robert and others, Madrigal and others, who are coming to spring training.
The body types of the three guys he mentioned, if they're in the outfield, they don't have to move. The shoulders touch one another all the way from right field to left. Well, they can show a movie on a couple of their backs, for God's sakes.
Well, you look at these kids, though, you're talking about. Everybody agrees the Sox have, if not the best farm system in baseball, top two. So we know the kids are there. We know they're coming up. But let's talk about pitching. Pitching. That's your home game. What are we going to see this year? Who's going to win on the mound for the Sox or compete at a higher level?
I want to see how Kopech is in spring training. Tommy John surgery. He pitched. We had 35,000 at Guaranteed Rate Field to see him pitch. 35,000.
That's
going 102 miles an hour with a slider.
Right.
So if that's what's coming, certainly the peripheral of that, you have to give him some veterans around him, too, to show him how to do things.
Sure.
They're quick learners as well.
And we know about Tommy John surgery that they do it a lot better now than they've ever done it.
Frank Jobe was the first one to do that. Sentinella Hospital in Los Angeles, yeah.
So there's nothing but hope and upside for the kid. At least that's what we think right now.
No, I mean, I blew my elbow out, but they didn't have the surgery, and it healed over the winter. Nobody knows that. It healed. So my first game was in Evansville, Indiana, and it was, not as cool as it is today here, but
cool.
It was a little cold, and I went out to throw the second inning, and my first pitch went about 50 feet just to warm up. And by the time I got to 8, I was okay, and never hurt me again.
Huh. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
What are you made of? We're going to have to catch you up and figure that out.
Another name, Dylan Cease is a guy who had an unbelievable season last year in the minors. Is there a chance that we see Dylan Cease up in the bigs this year playing for the team?
I'd say yes. Everybody's excited about seeing him. Ed and I did broadcasted a game last year over in Peoria. He was pitching against the Padres, a night game. But they had no chance. And I remember looking at Ed after he worked three innings and struck out like 8 or 9 guys. Ed looked right at me and he goes, he could be our closer right now.
Yeah. Interesting.
And I looked at him, I go, well, there's no doubt. And we don't go by the results. You look at the arm and the stuff that he had. It was big league stuff right then and there. So, I'm excited about seeing him. Number one of the guys that we've not seen at the big league level, he'd be the number one priority for me to see at the big league level and see that sustainable success because he's got great stuff. Now, it was disappointing Kopech getting injured last year because you put those two right next to each other. Forget about Carlos Rodon and
big league club. Right?
I mean, you got some talent.
Ed, which of the pitchers last year, in your mind, took the biggest step? I mean, obviously we got to look at Giolito for long term. We saw Lopez, Carlos Rodon had a strong comeback. Who took the biggest step in your mind?
I thought Giolito at times did. I scouted him in high school. He's my number one pick that I turned in 2012. And he just showed me the signs of doing this and doing that. It's not usually the stuff, as you guys know, for everybody out there. It's how they're going to handle the pressure of pitching a major league game.
Whole different deal.
Because this is a whole different thing. They're in high school one time, and all of a sudden, they're at Yankee Stadium pitching against the Yankees. I mean, come on, what are we doing? But Dylan Cease, he doesn't know that. If you use them, and Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn have been good with this group of guys, I got to tell you right now, you use them in a way where you're not pushing them in lion's den right away. Bring them along, and each step they get, they adjust to that, and they get to the big leagues, and they're ready to go. Hopefully that'll be the case.
I listened to a ton of games that you guys called this last year here on WGN Radio. One of the things that I think all fans were frustrated with, and I could hear it in your voices as well, is when we get to, you'd have a good outing from Lucas Giolito or Ronaldo Lopez, and you get to the seventh and eighth inning, and they'd start going to the bullpen, and quickly the game was given up. We saw that happen time and time again. But they have, Rick and Kenny, they have kind of overturned the bullpen. We've got new names down there, new people, probably some of these young guys as well. Are you confident that we might see a better bullpen from the White Sox this year?
I know I am.
Yeah, I am. But, you know, we had Danny Farquhar last year. He's in the dugout, and he's going to have whatever happened to him, he's going to, physically, he's lucky he's alive. He's in spring training now with the Yankees. This is how quick they come back.
It's amazing.
I mean, this is amazing. It is.
You know, talk about managers for a second. You guys both work for some interesting characters. We've talked about them off the air a lot. None of that can be repeated on the air. But Renteria's got something special with kids from an outsider standpoint. Is that true on the inside?
Oh, absolutely. You know, one of the things I love about Rick is he got here and he established, we're going to play hard, we're going to work hard, we're going to hustle, we're going to be where we're supposed to be. And I've always been that kind of guy, a fundamental guy. You have to hustle all the time, especially defensively.
Run it out.
That's it. Be where you're supposed to be. You know, it's beautiful to see a left fielder, Nicky Delmonico, did it all the time last year. Leury Garcia, they played left field, a base hit to right field. They were standing behind third base, almost in the coach's box, to back up a single to right field. Right. That's what you want to see. And Rick Renteria can get that from his players. I mean, you can't ask for more. Now, you just got to do those little tweaks here and there to make sure they're at their best offensively and pitching. But, you know, when it comes to fundamentals, if these guys are playing the game right, you're going to minimize mistakes. You're going to beat opponents because of it.
What about the pitching fundamentals? What do they work on in spring training? When those guys go to Arizona, and again, kids, the vets have to work on the same thing. But beyond motion and beyond being mentally ready, what are they working on?
When you get there, you're already ready to go. You've been working out. At least I was.
At least you better be, right?
Yeah, they should be ready to go. You're just working out on your thought process. Some guys, maybe too much thinking. What do I have to do? You have to throw it over home plate. For me, my transition was when I came back, you don't swing at this at strike one. You don't swing at this at strike two. Rarely did I get to strike three. Let's simplify what we're trying to do.
Well, you make an interesting point, though, because of the information thing. Is there information overload now? Because have access to every hitter, every tendency.
That's where Don Cooper comes in.
You got to manage these
guys.
Right?
He does a nice job with his staff. He really does. Yeah. And you don't let him get overloaded. Here, throw the ball over home plate. What happens if he hits it? We want him to hit it. We've got seven guys behind you and one in front of you that can catch it. I'm not so sure you can, but the other eight are going to do it. That's how it works.
Justin.
Well, you know, I'm fascinated at how you guys call a game and do this job in and out every single night. You know, I get to sit with Dave every day and try to pick his brain. But as you guys continue in this job, I mean, is it get easier, harder to keep up with what's happening in Major League Baseball from the booth, from day in and day out watching it?
I'd say no, mainly because we are around these guys having conversations with the coaches, with the players, and you kind of keep up to speed with that. You know, it's played a little differently with control of the game from when Ed and I played. When Ed went out to pitch, he was in command. He was in control. It was his job to say, get away from me. I've got this. And for me, it was the same thing defensively, or if I had an idea, if I wanted to bunt, I didn't have to ask permission. Now you've got the coaches basically running everything. Not the pitches. Not literally, you're going to throw a fastball on this pitch. They don't do that. They talk about that before the game. It's up to the pitcher's discretion. But most pitchers now, they just follow what the catcher wants. So it's changed, and we have to know that. It's played differently because basically everything is controlled from the bench, pregame, all of that. Every movement you make has already been thought out. You're not an individual anymore out there making your own adjustments. I don't like that so much, but everybody's doing it, so it's an even playing field, so there's no advantages.
Yeah. We don't rely a lot on sabermetrics. There are some things that you have to take a real good look at, and those. So we use some of that, but I want to know what he's got beating in his heart. You know, how's that beating? What does he want to do? And not everybody's cut out to be the closer. There's guys that are more than happy to be the setup guy. There's guys that want to pitch early. And, you know, as Darren said, you're looking at the individual that says, give me the ball. I want it right now. I know when La Russa took over, you know, he doesn't know me, and I'd saved like three or four games before he took over in the middle of the season. And he brings me in Baltimore against Earl Weaver's Orioles. And we're in the 10th inning, and the winning run's at third base with nobody out. And we had a two-hour rain delay in the water at Memorial Stadium. It was over your shoes when you ran in from the bullpen. And we're playing I Made It Through the Rain with Barry Manilow. So I started laughing. I started laughing on my way into the mound. And La Russa, he goes, you think there's something funny here? I said, there's nothing funny about this, but I'm not losing to Earl Weaver over there. He told me I couldn't pitch for him, so you get off the mound, and I'm going to get him out, and they're not scoring. He looks at me, he goes, so when I see him now, I go, how was that day in Baltimore? He goes, please, please, don't make me have a heart attack. He
goes, but you got it done?
I went in the dugout. Yeah, I struck out Lee May and Doug DeSensei.
That's the way you want
it. And Dempsey hit a shot up the middle. He was grabbed by the shortstop, Harry Chappas. He threw him out. Marv Foley in the dugout. I said, do something good now. You're catching me. Hit a home run. The second pitch, it's up to be Martinez in the bullpen in right field.
Kiss my butt, Earl.
I said that to him at the All-Star game.
Stick around. More in just a second. First a break, and then we're back in 720 WGN. Sandberg's off today, and we're afraid of her. Normally, she won't allow food in the room, but Ed and DJ were here, and they haven't eaten in days. So I interrupted a Big Shop management meeting. Todd was very welcoming. Stephanie, the other boss here, looked at me like, you're fired at 10:05. But it was all to get food for these guys. So who do we thank for the food?
You have to thank Maureen McDonald.
Okay.
She went and got donuts and bagels for y'all because she knew you'd be hungry. So we took all the calories out of these.
And let's tell Jerry we're going to bill him back for this. Reinsdorf's getting a bill for this. Thank you, Steph, for making that run. Justin.
One of the great things about the broadcast, Ed, is you sharing stories like you did about Earl Weaver and Tony La Russa. And I have a very vivid memory of being 9 or 10 years old watching a Cubs game. And you were pitching for the Phillies, and you were coming in the bullpen. And you walked a couple guys on some questionable calls.
Not unusual.
No. But you got into a shouting match with the umpire. And you said some questionable language that I was alone being babysat by the
questionable
TV.
Then, appropriate for the time.
I was overwhelmed by the language he was using.
He was using, yeah. Right. But do you remember that? I always want to talk to you about that when I listen to you on the radio, because it was such a moment to watch. And I think you still hold the distinction.
You should have been on my side of it. What do you mean? You were 10 or 11. I'm out there trying to earn a living.
So what happened? So what?
But he holds a record, right?
Yeah, I think you still hold the record for the guy getting thrown out of a game after he was removed from the mound. I think.
Well,
that's
I had to say something. I mean, I wasn't.
You
going
got
to
thrown out of a game
night.
After you were out of the game.
Yeah, he threw me out. I said, "You can't throw me out. I'm out already." He goes, "I'll get in the dugout." I said, "That's where I'm headed."
Why? What I didn't understand and didn't comprehend as a 10-year-old was they were right down the middle of the plate.
I didn't
it was
comprehend
obvious,
it as an
it was
adult trying to
obvious, yeah, there was obviously the umpire had an issue with you. It was like two men with an issue. What was happening in that situation?
I think he's a former player that I hit, to tell you the truth. I'm not sure. But
right.
Yeah, I said, you know, there was a difference in the strike zone then also. As Darren will tell you, National League called the ball like just above your ankles a strike. I hadn't figured that one out yet. So when I figured that one out, it became a little bit different. And anything above the thigh was a ball. I couldn't roll it up there any better.
It was right down the middle.
Yeah,
and
thanks for bringing that up.
I can't see, wait let that go, right? Listen, hold on a second. We're taking the last break. Come back. Dave has something else for you. And then we got to plug Sox Fest.
How can I top this?
That's why I'm giving you the break. I'm giving it some breathing room.
We are live from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next on 720 WGN. Back with Ed and DJ for just a couple more minutes. And Dave, why don't you do it, and then we'll plug the White Sox Sox Fest. By the way, Ed and DJ are going to hang out with Bill and Wendy, too.
Oh, good. Okay. Awesome. Well, real quick, since Justin brought up the umpiring question and the Earl Weaver and all of that. So we've had a lot of talk this past week about expanding replay in football because of the missed call at the end of the Saints-Rams game on Sunday. So we've seen replay now in baseball for several years. It's been tweaked. It's been refined. There's also this feeling that perhaps umpires have changed a little bit because they know replay is there. Do you think it's affected umpiring? Do you think umpires are more aware that because of replay they better get it right, or do you think it's had any effect on them at all?
Well, for me, they're always trying to get it right, unless right. they had a personal grudge, as we were just discussing about Ed's situation.
Never.
They're always trying to get it right, and they make mm-hmm. mistakes. There's no question about that. I honestly believe I wish they take away some of the replay options now. I don't, you know, Ed and I have discussed this during the broadcast, but the slide at second base, the pop-up slide, oh, your foot came off the bag, let's replay that. Every time you do that now, you're going to get guys hurt eventually trying to slide, stay on the bag. Take that replay away. Certain ones I think you just shouldn't have anymore.
And it takes too long.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the game's slow enough. We got to keep the game moving.
Yeah, so I personally think what we have in baseball is good. Don't add any more replay. Take some away if you want, but I still like this being in the hands of the umpires.
Are the fans going to be able to see you guys this weekend?
Absolutely.
They can see us, sure.
Yeah.
We're all over the place.
Just don't talk to you.
I didn't say that. You threw that one out. There we go. You and I are going to get along real well.
Ed's sitting in the lobby all day long, folks. Okay. Just sit there and look for him.
I'm telling you right now. Sign that says Darren.
Ed and I go back at least 25, maybe longer, and I've never seen you not be great to a fan, so I know it's not going to start this weekend. Umpires, not so much. Ex-managers, not so much. But fans, you're always great to.
Yeah, the umpires, you know, when talk about that, I think there's a rite of passage through leniency of your family. Everybody, you know, get on the umpire. And yeah. They're more than used to it. So I think you don't want to lose that part of it easy. Not that I'm condoning yelling at the umpire, but it's part of the game.
Yeah, it is. It really is part of the game.
It was part of my game. I know that day. Thanks for bringing that up.
You know, it's funny. You think about Thanksgiving with umpires. You think the family looks at the umpire at Thanksgiving and go, "You suck! You call these giblets!"
Let's start how the bird is first. So yeah. I got to get that first piece of right? the breast meat of that turkey. Then we're going to find out what's going on.
Yes,
tonight at 7 o'clock, Darren will be moderating with Ozzie Guillen, Kenny Williams, and Dwayne Wise, A Perfect Day. And tomorrow, Ed will moderate Bringing the Heat at 2 o'clock with Don Cooper and Lucas Giolito, Reynaldo Lopez, Jace Fry. Good panel.
It's almost baseball, boys.
I got to get time. An umpire in on that segment there.
There you go.
Justin, you've got him all fired up about umpires.
Hey, that's, you know what?
Bring him in from the bullpen.
Ed was in a good mood when he came in. Now look at him.
Now. I like that. I like surly Ed.
Bill and Wendy are next and more Ed and DJ. They're going to hang out for a bit. Now that we're feeding Ed, you're not going to be able to have him leave. You stay in here till the end of the weekend.
I got to finish the donuts.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. A boy in his dream. I will see you tomorrow at noon at Sox Fest, and we're back here Monday at 6 a.m. Dave, go Cats!
Go Cats! We'll talk to you at 1 o'clock tomorrow.